Okay, we are recording and broadcasting.
Mr. Chair, if you want to start the meeting, we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ramona. Good morning. My name is Kenneth Ehrman, and I'm the chair for the California Boating and Waterways Commission. Today, I'll be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting. I now call to order the June 10th, 2021 Commission meeting. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live webcast and can be viewed on www.calspan.org. The archive video will also be available at the CalSPAN website. Before we get started with today's reports and agenda, on the agenda, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Do we have a direction?
Do we have a flag?
Good. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the Republic
which for which it stands. One nation, under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Next, I'd like to ask if Megan Russell please take the role for the commission.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ehrman. Okay, Commissioner Catherine Pettibone of Sacramento, California.
Here.
Present. Commissioner Tom Peer of San Francisco, California.
Present.
Present. Commissioner Catherine Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Present.
Present. Commissioner Rudy Murillo, Commissioner of Coronado, California.
I'm present with thanks to Megan for some IT support at the last minute.
Of course. Present. And Chair Ehrman of Oxnard, California.
Present.
Excuse me. All right. Back to you, Chair.
Okay, thank you for that. So at this time, I would like to introduce the local dignitaries from the city of Lakeport. I show Ron Ladd, Parks Foreman from the city of Lakeport.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for having us, Commission.
And did you want to make any comments?
Well, we're excited to present our grant application at today's meeting. I think we come up about halfway through the agenda.
And do we have any other dignitaries from Lakeport that are not on the agenda?
It's just me.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So now we'll move forward with the State Parks and Department of Boating and Waterway staff. First, I'd like to introduce Armando Quintero, the director of the Department of Parks and Recreations.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Director Quintero had another conflict, so he'll be joining us shortly. So when he pops on the screen, if you don't mind going back to him and allowing him a few minutes to speak.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Next, we have Ramona Fernandez, Acting Deputy Director of Boating and Waterways.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Catherine Tobias, Legal Counsel, Department of Parks and Recreation.
Morning.
Good morning. And Steve Salze, Program Manager for Strategic Planning Division.
Good morning.
Thank you. So we'll ask Megan to read the opening statements regarding public comments on agenda and non-agenda items and other pertinent information regarding the Zoom.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ehrman. So if you wish to make a verbal comment on one of the agenda items, or a comment during the items not on the agenda, you can use the Zoom webinar app or call in by phone. And if you are currently watching the webcast on calspan.org, but you would wish to make public comments, please register for the Zoom webinar to receive your unique ID and password or phone number if you wish to call in. And this information can be found on the notice and agenda on our website at dbw.parks.ca.gov.
Excellent. Thank you, Megan.
Yes. Oh, and just one more thing. So if you are calling in by phone, you would press *9 to raise hand feature and *6 to unmute your device. And when we start the public comment periods, the order of commenters will be determined by the registration list and then who raises their hand first. So, and there's also a 3-minute time limit yes, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. So next we'll move to the chairman's report. I'll be very brief. My tenure as chairman's been very brief. I just want to thank everyone who participated yesterday in our virtual workshop. We were able to kind of really delve in to discuss the boating facility needs assessment report, along with the division and our presenters from Sacramento State. That was very productive, and we got a lot of information exchanged between the groups. I just want to thank everyone who participated in yesterday's discussion. And from that, we'll move on to the commissioner's activity report. And we'll start with Catherine Pettibone.
Well, thank you. From my perspective here in Sacramento, boating is very active on the rivers. I live near the river, Sacramento River, and so have been enjoying taking our dogs down there and playing in the water. And it's been really great to see the families and the kids and the boating public using the waterways. Here in Sacramento, we're actually developing the waterways, created a big dock, and the Sacramento River on both sides is being more developed. There's been a huge effort in cleaning up the trash and the pollution, and even our local law enforcement's getting involved. So that's been really, really exciting. On the other hand, if you look at Lake Folsom, you know, the drought here in California is real and impacting boating. So it's going to be something that we're going to have to wrestle with as the state. And then encourage other places to go for people to recreate in the water. San Francisco Bay being a nearby access point, of course, it's starting to get busy. And so that too has been fun to go down and get on the water. So it's good to see the state opening up, but people have been out on the water for a while now. And so I think we'll see that this coming summer.
Thank you, Catherine. Tom Pierre. I think you're still on mute, Tom.
There it goes. Hi. Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you again. I thought yesterday's meeting was very productive and very informative, and I want to once again express my appreciation to the various consultants and staff who participated in creating that report. I just wanted to just take a moment and draw everyone's attention to a very exciting development here in Aquatic Park. In the northern part of San Francisco. For those of you not familiar with it, there is a historic pier that essentially protects Aquatic Park and what used to be the terminus of Highway 101 when there was no Golden Gate Bridge and the ferries would run off of the foot of Hyde Street and then run from there to Sausalito. And that was, you know, part of Highway 101. So the historic pier that's there now is probably 100 years old, and it's in very, very poor shape. There's many sections of it that are cordoned off. And just because it's in the marine environments and it's made of reinforced concrete, and those things have a tendency to obviously deteriorate over time. So there's a citizens movement to not only rebuild the pier, but to also redo the entire aquatic park area here as part of a sort of Fort Mason aquatic park, Fisherman's Wharf. We'll just call it a redo. And a large part of that is obviously serving the aquatic community. There's a lot of paddleboarders, swimmers, of course, the two aquatic clubs down here, the South End Rowing Club, of which I'm a member, the Dolphin Club, and so forth. So it's something just, you know, keep your eyes open for, because I think it's a very exciting project. The community's raised, I think, $250,000 just simply to do the architectural planning, come up with some different scenarios under which the whole project might go forward. So it's a very exciting development. So that's all I have.
Excellent. Thank you. Catherine Hawkins.
Good morning, fellow commissioners, and I want to first thank the staff for all their leadership right now as we are into season of boating and waterways in California. Here from the Sierra Nevada, in the heart of Donner Lake and Lake Tahoe, boating has begun. We have seen exponential amount of growth in visitorship here in the region. I will say, though, the community and stewardship activities are very active right now around Donner Lake, as well as Lake Tahoe. You have local volunteer groups, land managers, cross jurisdiction collaboration between agencies, promoting number one safety, as well as welcoming all the visitors to the region, and then stewardship opportunities that happen with impacts, trash, littering, whatnot, parking enforcement. But I would say we are off to a good start with the last long holiday, and really right now everyone is ramping up for the big 4th of July holiday. It will just be noted that there is a burn ban, no fire in effect here in the region, and so there will not be any fireworks. However, we still anticipate that in and around the lake we'll still have the same amount of visitors despite there not being any activities as far as fireworks for the 4th of July. And that's my report.
Thank you, Catherine. Rudy Murillo?
Let me get off mute here. There, I hope. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I'm very pleased to see that only the chair is obliged to wear a tie. We'll hear from the heart of Coronado and the Coronado Peninsula. Basically, just a couple of concerns I've been hearing loud and clear because my cell phone is listed and it's a small island, but people are concerned about the very happy event of more people getting back on San Diego Bay, Glorieta Bay, so on and so forth. But asking a question, what can be done about percussive music emanating from commercial party boats? And it's basically driving people crazy. I don't know if this is, if there is a liaison from the department who could engage with the Port of San Diego to ask this question. I have not experienced it, but very reliable, trustworthy people, including members of the Naval Yacht Club and the Coronado Yacht Club, are complaining about one particular commercial boat specifically. Other than that, it's delightful to see the kids getting out in the water, at least on the bay again, in every form of little kayaks, no sabots to be seen, but kayaks and the paddle boards and so on and so forth. So far, everybody seems to be engaging safely. I do think with the liberation that there in areas such as San Diego Bay, the number of people taking advantage of our resources may lead to a little bit of boat nuisance, and in particular, concern about commercial operators out there trying to regain a footing. I don't blame them for that. And that's my principal concern. Glad to see the kids out there. A little concerned about overdoing it.
Thank you, Rudy. And I'll just kind of finish up. I attended the Boating Congress virtual meeting in March, and I was it was great to see all the different constituents speak. We talked about legislation. The division was there and presented on the status of the Boating or Waterways Commission. So it's really an informative event. It was kind of nice to have it. Some of these things on Zoom, we wouldn't normally get a chance to participate in them. Also, like a lot of you have stated, the waterways where I live at the Channel Islands and the Ventura Harbor are just a vibrant place right now. They're just booming with activity. And I think we kind of need to keep in mind during the pandemic, the waterways were really a safe haven for people where they could go and feel safe out of the house and out without really being public. So I think really have to be mindful. We need to be mindful going forward. We have this whole new group of people that are relying on the boating and waterways community as their place of refuge. And so I hate to see these, like we talked about, the coming drought or different things disrupt that, because it's really at a place right now where people are just really taking advantage of all the opportunities we have in California. So that's kind of my observations, and I'll leave it at that. I see that our director is on now. Are you on, Director?
Yes, Quintero? I am.
Hi, hello, sir. So welcome to the meeting. Would you like to have an opportunity to speak?
I just would like to say good morning to everybody, and I apologize for being late. I had a bit of a left turn that I had to take. You know, what an extraordinary year. I mean, I know we've all talked about COVID, the catastrophic fires, the social unrest, you know, all the things that we're going through. And now we're emerging from this, but we are emerging from this incredible year into the most dramatic drought that we've seen in California's history. And for boating and waterways, I think it has a significant impact. Certainly recognizing that many of the bodies of water that people like to enjoy are really low this year. And I know that you'll be talking about this, but as folks move from the available bodies of water that they typically use, we're going to be seeing a lot more use in rivers and along the coast. And those are new challenges. And I'm an active, you know, water recreationist. And I just want to highlight that state parks manages almost 600 miles of shoreline in California. 300 miles of those shorelines are along the coast. Next week, we have a graduation for this year's class of 280 lifeguards. And just to really emphasize the criticality of water safety, when I've spoken with Coast Guard or lifeguards out at the lifeguard stations on the coast, a typical conversation goes like this. And I'll say, so on a typical day, how many times do you have to go into the water to help somebody? And they'll say, you know, maybe 16 or something like that. And then I follow that up with, and how many of those do you think resulted in literally the saving of a life? And it's like 4 or 5. It's a real risk to us when we think that we know the environment that we're entering into. And it's a real reminder for all of us to obviously wear life jackets, use your safety equipment, and pay attention to the information as you approach these places that you're going to enjoy with your families. And I have to say that in the tragedies that I've seen this last year, it has included families. So really take care of each other and enjoy this incredible state that we have the privilege of living in. And really my incredible thanks to all of you on this commission for the incredible and very important work that you all do. And I very much look forward to continuing to work with all of you in the coming year. And I'll just put a little twist on this, and that is a few minutes ago, I did get confirmed by the Senate unanimously for this role, so it's official. So anyway, thanks so much to all of you, and a real pleasure. I'm gonna be joining the meeting for the day, so I may not be on screen, but I'm gonna be listening and watching. Okay, thank you.
Well, I would like to say congratulations on your confirmation, and we appreciate your time and here on the commission meeting as well. So sure. Before I close out agenda item 4, I just wanted to thank all the commissioners for the time they spend away from the meetings out in the community and interacting with the Boating Commission on behalf of the Boating Commission. So we thank you for that. So we'll move on to the next agenda item. I just want to make public comment periods have been scheduled throughout the meeting, and they will occur after the following reports: Acting Deputy Director update, Governor's proposed budget may revise, California State Parks Strategic Operations Plan Path Forward 2026, Lakeport Boat Launch Facility Restroom Replacement, Law Enforcement Maritime Training, For Hire Operators Vessels Licensing Program, For Hire's Carrier Program, Yacht and Ship Brokers and Salesman License and Enforcement Programs, Boating Accident Report Programs, and Law Enforcement Financial Aid Programs. In addition, Agenda Item 10 will be public comment period on non-agenda items, and the comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items that are not currently on the agenda. And in keeping with what Megan mentioned earlier, each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Members of the public are not required to provide their names. However, stating it would make it easier for staff to contact members of the public for any follow-up if necessary. And individual speakers may not pull their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. So with that, we will move on to Deputy Director's report, and Acting Deputy Director Ramona Fernandez will present the division updates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good morning, everyone. And first, I want to kind of echo the commissioner's comments on yesterday's workshop. So I think as well that it was a good workshop, lots of good ideas, lots of good recommendations moving forward. So we appreciate everyone's input. on yesterday's session. Also, I wanted to thank the commission on your patience with the division over these last several months. And, you know, finally we got to reschedule this meeting. So appreciate everyone's patience while we, you know, work through my absence during these last months. I want to just thank many of you reached out, sent emails to me, and, you know, it really meant a lot to me. So I want to also thank you for your well wishes. I am glad to be back. I am doing well. So I think moving forward, as Director Quintero and many of you mentioned, we do have, you know, some challenges ahead. But I always say that, you know, with many of the challenges that we have, we there's always opportunity. So I think those opportunities are here. And I think that we have an opportunity there for us to move forward on our programs, as well as the issues that we have to resolve. I'll be doing my program update. I'll be all after my completion of my update on some of our programs and some of the highlights over this last few months. I'll be providing a LEDGE update report on behalf of our legislative office. And then you'll hear from our Administrative Services Division. Our budget officer will provide the update on our Harbors and Watercraft and the governor's proposed budget. Next slide, please. So some administrative updates. We have successfully, over the last several months, moved our field operation to a new facility. This is a long-awaited endeavor that we've been working on for many years. And so our facility is now at the Stockton Sailing Club, which is in the Buckley Cove Marina in Stockton, California. Huge improvement from where we were before. So we were excited for that. Obviously, with new moves, there's always some issues and kinks that we need to resolve, and we're kind of going through that as well. For our headquarters, we will be moving into a new building. The new natural resources building is on schedule, and the department will be moving in on a phased approach. Headquarters, we're tentatively scheduled to begin moving in October. The department will start in August, and the division will be moving in around early October into the new building. So we're pretty excited about that move as well. We continue to have productive conversations with the Department of Motor Vehicles regarding the decoupling, or the, should I say, the separation of the Quagga Zebra muscle sticker in our vessel registration process. DMV is on schedule to have these changes made by the next round of our renewal notices that will go out to boaters around September of this year. The division and the DMV is coordinating messaging to go out to boaters of this new process. So we're currently working with the DMV on that to make sure that boaters are aware of the change in this process. We also receive reports from DMV on registered boater numbers. So moving forward, I'll be sharing those numbers with the commission as well. So as of May 31st of this year, DMV has identified 670,957 registered boaters. And the department is also currently working on a drill request from the California Department of Public Health regarding our staff that have been on contact tracing. The CDPH has requested an extension on a reduced number of staff. We currently have about 4 employees that are assigned to this contact tracing. So we are hopeful that some of those will be able to return to their program areas. Next slide, please. We have been successful in one of our staff persons returning, and that's Charlie Hesse, who manages our rulemaking packages for the division in our programs. So we plan to get back on track on processing our regulation packages again. So we're glad to have Charlie back with us. Next slide, please. Some highlights on some of our programs. So our aquatic invasive plant control program started this year on March 19th, Delta-wide. Some of our successes in that program have been, I think I've previously mentioned, we have been challenged with recruitment efforts. So we have been able to hire a senior supervisor for the aquatic invasive plant control program. We've hired a senior scientist for the floating aquatic plant program. We've been able to hire 2 aquatic specialists, 2 aquatic technicians, and we are utilizing more effective treatment for more areas this year with the herbicide called Diquat. We've also increased collaboration with our sister agency, the Department of Water Resources, and controlling restoration sites. And we've also increased collaboration with Fresno by assisting them with treatments in the areas that they manage. Some of the challenges that we still have in this program is we are continue to backfill a field supervisor position. And we'll be recruiting for that position in the very near future. We have increased numbers of windy days already this season, preventing certain treatments to occur. The increasing number of older vessels. So our resources are starting to see, we're starting to see a wear and tear on those resources. And as Director Quintero and many of you, the drought condition definitely increases the infestations in the Delta as well. Let's see. Next slide, please. So in partnership with our communication and marketing and our interpretation and educations division, this year, we launched our 2021 safety messaging and environmental awareness campaigns. We started that to coincide with boating season and National Safe Boating Week, which ran from May 22nd through the 28th. Some of the campaign goals includes educating boaters about the way that they can prepare for safe and environmentally sound and responsible recreating in our waterways. And also it focuses on, wearing that life jacket to save lives. The campaign will also include the California boater card education, clean and green boater education, and environmentally sound boating practices. We have identified some paid advertising through our social media platform. And some of the areas that we hit, the higher areas that we hit will be this year, Los Angeles, Riverside, Sacramento, San Diego, San Francisco, and the Stockton and Modesto area. And that's determined with through our accident reporting statistics. And you'll hear a little bit more about our accident reporting program later on in today's session. We call those areas betas, which are boating accident targeted areas. We also produced four new 15-second videos for this year's campaign. We released a press release, went out May 20th, reminding boaters of safe boating practices. As I mentioned, we do have some paid social media and also outreach. The impacts of COVID didn't prevent us from continuing our messaging out to the public. So we switched gears and produced many virtual events and safety messaging. Our AquaSmart that we normally do live in schools, this year were live streamed. So a combined 227 live streams and pre-recorded school performances were done. An estimated 87,000 students we reached. We had 30 requests for Spanish events. And we also participated in a special event with the Orange County Youth Summit's Children's Water Education Festival, where thousands of fourth, fifth, and sixth graders participated in this virtually. Normally, we would be out in events handing out life jackets. And again, we found a way to distribute these through partners. So 8,200 life jackets were issued out to our partners at our aquatic centers, to our life jacket loaner stations, and to local law enforcement. We partnered with 24 local marine law enforcement agencies to provide life jackets for positive outreach and education. We designed and printed new double-sided life jacket loaner station signs with one side in English and the other in Spanish. Some additional outreach that was that we did this year is we created short organic videos for our social accounts on safe boating. We participated in two AquaSmart Live Lifeguard Edition live stream events that included safe boating and water recreation messaging. The live stream was featured on our state parks Facebook page, and it reposted to the Boat California Facebook page. And this program garnered a collective 21,000 views, and it continues to count, move up. Next slide, please. To date, we have issued out approximately 100,000 California voter cards. From January 1 through June 2nd of this year alone, we issued out about 17,000 cards. I believe we're on 40 and under age group for this program. Next slide, please. Our Clean and Green program also did online education. And from March to June 6, six short videos where we promoted clean and green boating practices. These videos had garnered about 145,000 views. Also, we had placed 130 floating restroom posters and 155 decals for the monitoring of sewage dump out that were placed across the state. For our 2021 Clean Vessel Act, which we call CVA outreach campaign, that included target marketing boaters, 75% motorized and 25% for non-motorized. This targeting will hit geographically, it'll be statewide. And the campaign goals for this is to encourage and educate our boaters regarding responsibilities and impacts of waste management. And secondary is a call to action to promote our Pump Out app to download, which we have that will show boaters where all of our pump outs are throughout the state. We printed posters for marinas and also digital displays in social media. And like many of our programs, you know, we count on our partners throughout the state. So our Dock Walker program is no different. Our partners in this program inspire and educate boaters and other recreators to be safe and environmentally sound while boating. These partners safely distribute out our boater kits with educational materials to the boating areas such as marinas and boat launch facilities. Next slide, please. Okay, so that includes an update just on some of our programs and, you know, what we've been doing over the last several months during, you know, the start of our boating season. And I will now read an update from our legislative office. So this is the summary provides, this report provides summary excerpts and status of legislation affecting the Division of Boating and Waterways. Information contained in this report is accurate as of June 3rd of 2021. Assembly Bill 591, the vessel arrests. Summary, this bill would authorize peace officers to issue a fix-it ticket for the following vessel-related violations. 1, expired vessel registration. 2, failure to paint the vessel identification number on the forward half of the boat. 3, operating a vessel without possessing an operating license, operating card. 4, failure to display registration stickers on a vessel. 5, issuing a recreational boat without a proper flotation device. 6, operating a boat without a proper service fire extinguisher. And 7, having a fire extinguisher without the proper metallic nameplate. The status is referred to the Senate Transportation Committee. Next bill is Assembly Bill 817, the sports fishing license, as 12 consecutive month licenses. The summary, this bill would authorize the Department of Fish and Wildlife to issue 12 consecutive month sport fishing license and would require the department to submit recommendations on increasing fishing licensing fees to the legislation by January 1 of 2025. And the status is the Senate Rules Pending Committee assignment. Commission action, there is none. This is just for information only. And Mr. Chair, that completes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Director Fernandez. Now we'll hear public comments. Megan will read the names from the meeting registration or call on those using the raise the hand feature from Zoom.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ehrman. Let's see, we do have one comment, Jerry Desmond. I'm going to go ahead and unmute him. Okay, Jerry, you are unmuted.
Hello, thank you, Megan. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC. Just quickly want to welcome Acting Deputy Director Fernandez back, especially welcome. We look forward to continuing the close working relationship as we go forward on a number of important issues that are on the agenda today, and appreciate the, you know, active engagement of the commissioners as well, and Director Quintero. On one piece of legislation, AB 591, RBOC is supporting that measure as it's moving forward. You know, thank you.
If I may interrupt, I have a quick question for Jerry.
Sure. Well, okay with me. Well, thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I interject?
Yes, go ahead.
Jerry, I don't know if you were on, but a lot of residents in the San Diego Bay Area have been concerned about the noise, percussive noise coming from large party boats. I'm wondering if this is something that the industry could get involved in too. And it's not just residents, and it's not just people trying to hit tee shots. It's people from the adjacent yachting clubs.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. I did hear that, and we have a number of our directors who are from the San Diego area, and we will look into that. It's the first I've heard of it, but we will definitely look at that down in the San Diego area.
Okay, I won't name the particular party boat, but it might be associated with a sparkling celebration drink. So. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Desmond. Do we have anyone else, Megan?
Chair Ehrman, I do not see anyone else at this time.
Okay. So I will just ask a quick question. Deputy Director Fernandez, the AB 951, the infraction, the ability to cite the boats for a myriad of different infractions, registration and different things like that. The fees generated from that, are they earmarked specifically to go back to the division?
No, those actually go back to the counties.
100% they'll go back?
Yes.
Okay, that was my only curiosity. Thank you. Any commissioners have any comments? Okay, so we'll move on to the next agenda item. We have Budget Chief Francis Del Valle will present on the governor's proposed budget May revise.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me. Today will be short and sweet. So I will be giving a presentation on the May revise budget. And actually, can we go to the next slide, please? Thank you very much. I will go over the proposed 21-22 budget as of May revise, also the harbors and watercraft appropriation. A little reminder of what the governor's budget proposal was, what the May revise proposal is, and any legislative changes that have happened. This information is accurate as of today, so any other changes will let everybody know. But as of today, all this information is correct. Next slide, please. The Division of Boating and Waterways has a proposed budget as of May revise of $69 million. From that, $45 million is to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, $19 million for a federal trust fund, $2.7 million for the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund, and $1 million for the Vessel Operator Certification Account. Next slide, please. We broke down the harbors and watercraft as being the biggest funding source. So in the harbors and watercraft revolving fund, it is $45 million appropriation proposed. Of that, $25 million is for support funding and $19.5 million will go to our local assistance programs. Next slide, please. The governor's budget proposal, so just a reminder, or if anybody, this is new information, there was one proposal for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund to stabilize the fund in the fall. And this proposal requested a decrease in the amount of $13.9 million just to recognize historical levels of expenditure and just capture any savings that we normally have that revert. This request also suspended the transfers to the public beach restoration program. And it also requested a fee increase, which has not happened since 2005. The fee increase was from $10, which is what the current fee is, to $35. And there was a point also on this slide that isn't there, but we asked for $20 million from general fund for our Davis-Dulwig transfers. The proposal was kept open for May revise. And so we can go to the next slide. The May revise proposal, Department of Finance, they asked us to change the proposal a little bit. And the biggest thing, this slide has a lot of information for you guys just as reference, but the biggest changes from the governor's budget to May was the fee. So the fee increase, instead of being $35, it would now be $20. So it would go essentially from $10 to $20. With that change, the department requested additional general fund funding to cover our aquatic invasive species program, so 10.7 for that, and an additional $10 million each year for the Davis-Dulwig transfers. We kept the $13.9 million reduction. We also kept the suspension of the transfers to the public beach restoration program. And that was our proposal in May. Through the legislative process, and if we can go to the next slide. That'd be great. Through the legislative process, the legislature came back and said there will be no fee increase implemented in 21-22, and they were going to give us an additional help for the fund, which brought $30 million general fund to the Harbors and Watercraft Fund. This $30 million would cover our Davis-Dulwich transfers. It would cover funding for our AIS program and also just additional help for the fund due to no fee increases. However, there is proposed budget bill language that requires the department by January 10th, 2023 to come up with a new proposal that may have some fee increases, expenditure reductions, and just other actions to be able to stabilize the fund. Of course, this would be in consultation with stakeholders and committees in order to come up with the best proposal to stabilize the Harbors and Watercraft Fund. And next slide. Yeah, so just wanted to present the changes. I know this proposal changed actually quite a bit from the first proposal that we had in the fall. So if there's any points of clarification that anybody needs or any questions, I would be happy to take those.
Okay, so we'll now hear public comment. Megan, do we have anybody signed up for public comment for this proposal? I mean, for this report?
Yes. So far, I see one public comment, Jerry Desmond. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute. And Jerry, you should be unmuted.
Thank you, Megan. And hello again, commissioners and department and division. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California. Just adding some thoughts on the budget proposal and where things are at. RBOC, together with a number of boating organizations, I think everybody is aware, had significant concerns with the governor's budget proposal as originally announced. For our constituents, mostly the amount, the percentage of the registration fee increase. You know, we appreciate the dialogue and the efforts that are displayed with the governor's May budget revise, with the significant reduction in the amount of the proposed reg fee increase, with the suspension of beach restoration, which we think is just tangentially related, and a commitment to the stakeholder process. Since then, we have been advocating and continuing a dialogue with State Parks and Director Quintero as well, and advocating in the legislature that the stakeholder process in the budget trader bill be fleshed out with detail so that there can be an open, transparent, meaningful engagement with all stakeholders in a public process. So the bottom line is we're looking forward to what is ahead, and we appreciate the administration and the legislature listening and engaging with the boating community, and look forward to working with the commission, division, and department going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Desmond. Do we have anyone else?
Yes. Let's see here. Next comment, Winston Bumpus. And Winston, you are unmuted.
Thank you very much. And thank you, commissioners. I'm Winston Bumpus. I'm president of Recreational Boaters of California, and I work very closely with Jerry. So I'd like to augment his comments that we're very appreciative of the work and the dialogue and the current proposed language from the legislature, both in the Senate and in the Assembly. We look forward to working in the stakeholders process. We certainly, as in a discussion we had previously with Director Quintero, we are on the same side. We want to make sure that the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund is stable, ongoing, and looking for the best ways to do it. Several concerns that we had that we hope to be fleshed out in the stakeholders process include the fact that we only get, a small percentage of the fuel tax dollars that boaters pay. That is something we want to continue to look at. We are also concerned, the money for repairing beach erosion is back in to under DBW and out of our HWRF fund. We think longer term, there are other stakeholders should be paying for beach erosion rather than boaters. And it's the same with aquatic invasive species. We don't mind paying our fair share, but we don't think it should be all on recreational boaters' back, because there are other stakeholders who take advantage or get advantage from that program of the removal of the aquatic invasive species. I just want to say, appreciate the dialogue. We look forward to further dialogue, and appreciate everybody's time and energy. One last comment. We certainly believe that is one of the things that needs to be done is an economic impact study. I know you have the boating facilities needs assessment, but and I know one of the commissioners mentioned it yesterday, but we certainly need a economic impact study to be done to look at and I think it'd be good for the Department of Boating and Waterways. It's good for recreational boaters to really understand what the huge economic impact to restaurants and other facilities, boating manufacturers, to the economic value to the state of California. So with that, I appreciate everybody's time, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bumpus. Do we have anyone else, Megan?
See here. I'm not seeing. See one hand works. Okay, I am not seeing anyone signed up to or anyone raising their hand. I would just like to remind if anyone's listening by phone, it's *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute. But I'm still seeing no hands raised, so I think we are good to move on to comments from the commission. Oh. I see Katie's hand.
Go ahead, Katie. I'll go after you.
Okay. Oh, well, I was going to bring it up at the beginning and I forgot, but a comment which actually dovetails really well with Mr. Bumpus's comment was, I just saw yesterday a report which is the first official marine economy satellite account released by two Department of Commerce, U.S. Department of Commerce agencies. And what they noted nationally is that the marine economy contributed $397 billion to the nation's domestic gross domestic product in 2019 and grew faster than the nation's economy. It's just really great because we know it here in California, but to see the feds actually recognize this. Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo actually noted America's strong marine economy is absolutely vital to getting the nation back. President Biden sees immense value and potential of strengthening our blue economy, and this administration will continue to take actions to combat climate crisis, conserve our oceans, protect our coastal communities. But these statistics show how powerful America's blue economy is as a driver of jobs, innovation, and economic growth. And this was from Ben Friedman, acting NOAA administrator. And so certainly this is something that is getting looked at federally. And the comment about looking at it in California is really important. Experts from NOAA and the Bureau of Economic Analysis describe sectors representing businesses dependent on the nation's oceans, coasts, and Great Lakes. Marine-related gross domestic product grew 4.2% faster than the growth of total U.S. gross domestic product. So all this to say, the marine industry is really helping our economy bounce back. And so looking at what we're doing here in California to support that is going to be incredibly important. And I would echo, and I've mentioned this in previous commissions, as we look forward to stabilizing the Water Harbor Craft Revolving Fund, we need to really look at all where all the money is going, where boaters are paying, you know, who's benefiting. Do we need to have a relook at that tax increase that sent money off into the general fund? Do we need to look at having other agencies help with the invasive species? I think everything needs to be on the table. And I would also encourage, as we look at the increasing fees for registration, looking at a robust kind of evaluation of what other states with a lot of waterways, Minnesota is an example, Great Lakes, anywhere that has a lot of inland lakes as well as coast, see what they're doing with their registration and how they're funding, because I know they have very different ways of going about it. So thank you.
Excellent. And I agree with what you said, Catherine. I talked about earlier that our lifeline for a lot of people is our waterways, our blue economy, like you state. And I think now it needs to be put at the forefront of how vital it is in California to people, not just economically, but just as a whole, as a safe place, as something they consider to be so essential to the way they live their lives. So I think the economic impact would be important to look at. And I'd also ask too of Chief Del Valle, if I remember initially, they was stated that California's boating registration were like among the fifth lowest in the United States. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so we're not raising them, obviously they're not being raised in this budget, but at some point inevitably they're going to have to be raised. And I'm wondering if it's possibly looking towards now more of a phase in instead of this one-time jump, or we've talked about VLF fees, the way vehicles are registered or something like that, because I would imagine it's only a matter of time. At some point, the registration fees will have to be increased to offset some of the other costs. So I'm just curious if we talked about that earlier, if there was any look at trying to mirror what the VLF fees are on vehicles.
Right. And I think, Ramona, I don't know if you have some comments, but I know that there's some ideas out there as to how to raise the fees and what approach, whether it's a phase-in type of approach. And those, I imagine those conversations we'll be having with you guys and other stakeholders just to figure out the right way to go about this.
Yeah, I'll just kind of add on to that, Francis, thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair, we will be looking definitely at, and as Commissioner Pettibone mentioned, you know, we have the statistics and we have the information of what other states are doing, looking at like states of, you know, waterways, bodies, numbers of vessels, and how they're handling registration. So we'll be looking at a number of things moving forward in, you know, conjunction with obviously the commission and as well as our boating community.
I would just add, I think it really needs to examine what is the percentage of people who aren't registering their boats, the unregistered boats that I know from some of our previous tours really put a drain on the budgets of the departments that have to manage these areas, because the unlicensed boats have to be towed, they have to be lien sold, they have to be stored, and really no one's paying the freight for that. I know the vehicles were very enforced oriented on unregistered vehicles, but I think that's possibly being not translating over to the boating industry, I mean the boating world, and I'll leave it at that. Any other comments from commissioners?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner, it's Rudy. What Katie presented was extremely interesting, and I think it chimes in with the earlier suggestion of paying a little attention to an economic impact report, the results of which I think would be extremely useful. I'm not sure that the state of California is getting its due credit for, you know, just the vast array of water and boating resources we have. So I would certainly be supportive of engaging in trying to get those bottom lines.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Seeing no other commission's comments, I just want to thank you, Chief Francis DeVille. That was an excellent report and we appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So we'll move on to our next agenda item. We have the DPR Strategic Operations Plan, Program Manager of Strategic Operations Planning Divisions, Steve Soleil, Kevin Matthews of Deloitte Consulting will present on plan path forward for 2026.
Mr. Chair, good morning, and commissioners. My name is Steve Zaley. I'm consultant to DPR for transformation and strategic planning. Thank you for giving me time this morning on your busy agenda. We have some history on this project with Boating and Waterway. Your commission was the first one I presented to in October of 2019 on a framework for what is to be our first ever strategic plan at Parks and Recreation called Path Forward. So today I'm going to give some more background, give an update on that, and then take a quick journey through some of the priority, we expect to be priority objectives in the plan. And it is a draft plan. We need to keep track of that right away. So before we go through the PowerPoint, I want to give a little background. Development of the strategic plan path forward has been going on for a little over a year, and it's been a completely open and inclusive process in three parts. First was development, and then review, and then an engagement portion, which we're coming up on in just a few weeks. So following a successful transformation process, the department in 2015 through 17 was transformation. It was positive change time for the department. But what we ended up with after that was a lot of the momentum going away from some of the projects. And it was very clear that what the department needed was a multi-year strategic plan. And that has been developed, as I said, virtually now over the last year by a core team of 12. And that includes two Deloitte Consulting representatives, a DPR work group of 119, of which Boating and Waterways had some members of that work group, represented all programs of the department and all divisions and our headquarters unit. We had a partner advisory committee of 21, an executive staff of 13, and that includes Ramona. The current draft has been reviewed by our director and comms, and our next step is agency review. And then we'll go into an engagement process. And the idea of the engagement process is to give employees, to give partners, stakeholders, and the general public an opportunity to review the draft and then take a survey and give updates, give ideas for revisions and their comments on the draft, which will influence the final draft. So then after that, it's a three-week process that'll be started probably in late July, the engagement process, late July and early August. And then finalizing that, the final plan will be launched probably in September, rolled out with an implementation plan for the first year of the top priority objectives into projects. Okay, so let's take a brief journey through the plan itself. And there's a lot of content and all, but just to give you an idea of what the plan looks like, and then get ready for that engagement process in a few weeks. So next slide, please. So here's an idea. The plan is made up of a vision, mission, values, and then it goes into the plan elements itself, themes, goals, and objectives. So these are the eight themes of the plan: employee development, natural and cultural resources, organizational culture, equity, operations. Operations includes recreation programs, systems, public safety, and administration. Next slide, please. And next slide. This is our planning process. This is just an overview page. Next slide. Okay, on this slide, the mission and the vision. What was decided early on was the Department of Parks and Recreation mission has served us well. And if you look at that mission, it's clearly very relevant today, and has served us very well and should serve us during this first 5-year period of time. And it reads, the mission of California Department of Parks and Recreation is to provide for the health, inspiration, and education of the people of California by helping to preserve the state's extraordinary biological diversity, protecting its most valued natural and cultural resources, and creating opportunities for high quality outdoor recreation. And that's a good umbrella for a DPR to continue its work. The Path Forward vision was developed by the work group that I talked about and then reviewed and modified by others. In the draft, it reads, as innovative stewards, we inspire a diverse public to engage with and sustain California's natural and cultural resources while recreating, learning, and creating experiences that build lifelong memories. Next slide, please. These were the core values that were adopted by the work group and then reviewed as we discussed. Stewardship, integrity, safety, adaptability, collaboration, equity, diversity, sustainability, innovation, and access. And you can see the thrust of the plan is about collaboration, about partnerships, moving ahead with positive change in the future in a very inclusive way. Next slide. This shows you the stakeholder responsibilities. All parks employees will have been and will be involved in the development of the plan. The work group, the partnership and stakeholder advisory team, the core team, executive steering committee, and the general public. Next slide. And next slide. Okay, this shows you a graphic showing the vision, mission, and themes, our eight themes that we talked about. Next slide, please. Okay, so what I'd like to do is take us through briefly through a journey of the plan, outlining the 10 of the 95 objectives. There are eight themes, 25 goals, 95 objectives. Nobody should be too worried about the large number of objectives. When you look at the objectives, there are a lot of them that can be combined into projects for implementation. And so it's not as daunting as it may appear. So let's go through a few. The first one is under employee development, which is the first theme, develop a JEDI program. And that is justice, equity, diversity, and inclusiveness. Very important for our department. Our department has already started in a number of projects that go perfectly along with this, with looking for access and looking for interpretation and making changes within the department. So that is goal number two, objective three, develop a justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion JEDI program. Okay, next slide, please. Under natural and cultural resources, the objective I'd like to outline is under goal two, objective one, ensure the prioritization of ongoing maintenance and stewardship for the restoration and preservation of natural and cultural resources. A very important thing. This particular in the maintenance part of the transformation program, this continues today as an important objective going forward. Okay, next slide, please. Under culture, goal number one, objective four, ensure preservation of historic properties. And this also came from transformation by developing adaptive use program that identifies and properly rehabilitates department-owned historical properties while supporting department and public service needs. Okay, next slide. Under equity, there's a number of very important objectives, and this is one of them, and comes from transformation. Continue to implement the Relevancy and History Project at California Citrus Historic Park and El Presidio de Santa Barbara. Developing new pilot sites showcase the stories of underrepresented communities in state parks. And this is an example of our reaching out to underserved communities to get involved in parks and us get involved with them in developing programs. Next slide. Under operations, next slide, please. Okay, under operations, we have three. And the first is goal number three, objective one, collaborate with resource specialists, subject matter experts, as well as tribal and community representatives to develop and deliver innovative, compelling, and diverse interpretive programs. And then two, concerning recreation, under goal number one, objectives three and four, continuously assess and evaluate and improve the department's recreational programs and opportunities, very important. And then look at the, assess and look forward with regard to our organizational structure of DPR. Under systems, next slide. This is a very exciting objective and one that we're going to hear about very soon. This came through transformation and is working its way towards being launched. And this is to implement the Parks mobile application for public use with an internal employee portal that collects experience and feedback data. So something that could be used for the general public, they can get a lot from this. It's a good way to expose people to California State Parks and what it has to offer, as well as do a better job of serving underserved communities and getting involved with that. So mobile app, that's a big one. Next slide. Under public safety, goal one, objective three is enhance public health measures to limit exposure and spread of illnesses and disease for both staff and public, obviously triggered from the COVID-19 pandemic, and one that extremely important for the department. Department's done quite a job of adapting this year, and we look forward to taking on this objective going forward. And the last one I'll talk about today is under administration. Next slide, please. Administration goal one, objective three, establish and implement department-wide standardized project management approach. And this is about accountability for the department and how can we ensure that when we start a program development, we can actually finish it. We can complete it and activate it and move it forward. And the department uses several different project management approaches right now. The idea is to create one that can work for all projects, be it construction projects, management projects, or excuse me, maintenance projects, or new programs and new initiatives that the department takes on. How do we move it from the start to the finish in real time? So summarizing, we've moved from transformation, path forward development process, working through the work groups and other groups helping us, mission, vision, values, themes, goals, and objectives, and now the engagement process, which is quite exciting. And we will give you plenty of advance notice because we want all of your partners, stakeholders, and employees to be involved in this engagement process and offer their suggestions and updates with regard to the draft. So I'll end here and encourage all of you to review the draft. It will be up on our website along with a survey and a frequently asked questions document in the July timeframe, and then that will influence the final document that will be launched in September. So I will open it up for some questions if there are any.
Yes. I'd like to make a couple comments, if that's okay. Thank you, Steve, very much for the work and your leadership for years of work now on this. And there's just a couple of overarching comments. One of them is that, you know, you see throughout this presentation that says develop and create, and my intent is to really put this into action. So this is a living document, and I'm looking forward to taking away the develop and create. It's going to get done, and it's going to be reflected in the department as we do that. I'm also particularly interested in streamlining and really understanding how we all work cohesively in a much smoother fashion. I've already been working internally at looking at processes that we can literally streamline and remove the sort of internal hurdles that often happen in bureaucracies. When Steve mentioned justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, my approach is that that is just going to be implemented in everything we do. And, you know, when I think about diversity, I think about talent, I think about solutions. And I really want to make sure that we're looking at diversity. It just makes sense. I mean, and also in this time that we all experience such dramatic and rapid change in the world, in order to be effective, we're going to all have to be agile. And so how we create a communication system, a way of working together to really be responsive to what's happening. I mean, just this last year, unbelievable the adaptation that's had to happen literally on the fly. So how do we make sure that this strategic plan accounts for that and prepares us for that? In fact, I've said to friends who like to make lists about everything they're going to do in a day that they should throw chaos in there a few times, you know, because that's the reality, right? And so maybe we should put that in there, Steve. I don't know. Throw chaos around on some of the pages, just random. Maybe have it move on its own. But also, Steve mentioned the Park app, which has been in process for years, and it's actually going to be released in the coming weeks. And I would just like to share with you some attributes that I think are going to have some real application for boating and waterways. We've entered into a contract with a provider who's going to be managing the infrastructure, the digital infrastructure for that app. But the beauty is that employees in state parks can go in and update information and change it. And when it comes to boating and waterways, you're going to be able to put notices in there as soon as you need to put up a notice. And we'll be able to reflect that in those areas where water recreation is a part of the story. It is really a great, it's a great application. And one of the things that I also love about the application, and Steve talked about making sure that we're making parks accessible to everyone. For me, a part of that accessibility is how do we communicate with the public so that they know about those parks and know where they are in relation to their house. And when you go into that app, it doesn't track you. It doesn't collect your information, which is great. But what it does do is it always shows where you are in relation to the parks. And the way that I'm looking at it, it literally feels like a park compass, if you will. And you are at the center of it. And so for communities out there, for individuals and communities, when you start using this, not only are you going to see state parks, you're going to see other public lands as well. And for the public, as we all know, it's not often clear which park lands you're on. Is it state, county, national? And I just love the idea of literally giving, through the release of this app, a park compass to the public. And it's really, I think you're going to find it really exciting. And again, understand that like the park app, I really want the strategic plan to be an interactive plan, and I really want it to be practical. And, you know, listening, you know, earlier to Francis's conversation about boat registration fees and how do we cover our costs, you know, that's, I put a lot of thought into that, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you on that, because it applies to everything that we pay fees for, right? And I worked in the water world for a long time. I was an elected official on a water board. And one of the things that I saw is, and it sort of applies to the registration fees. And I heard you, Catherine, when you were talking clearly about, you know, the impact of raising fees, certainly so dramatically. But if we had gone forward with the fees that we proposed, which was, I think, $35 a year, it still would not have caught us up if we had just been following the consumer price index change since 2005. That price would still not get us to making up that sort of, you know, falling behind the curve, if you will. But I think that what that has to do with is a combination of public education and real clarity about where are we spending money and who else is investing in this. Because I totally agree that it's rare that it's just one group, and probably not existent, that just one group is really having an impact that needs public investment to really take care of the resources. So that's also something I'm very interested in. So anyway, I just wanted to say that for me, the strategic plan captures a lot of information. It's going to take a lot of work on everybody's behalf in getting input into that, but I really want it to be a living document that's effective for all of us. And I think it presents a real opportunity for boating and waterways. And a lot of the things that I've heard recently about getting workshops together, getting stakeholder meetings together, I'm really looking forward to continuing to work with you. And again, thanks, Steve, for that. And I'll back out now. Okay.
Thank you for your comments. One, if I could add, Mr. Chairman, one final note is that all of the divisions of Parks and Recreation, all of the divisions will be encouraged to develop their own strategic plans that are consistent using a similar format. And I think it's worked quite well being very inclusive and taking the time to not be a top-down program. And I know the director really supported that when he came on board, and congratulations, Director, on your confirmation. It's worth it to take the time, because when this is launched, we'll already be started on implementation for the first year, and there's a really good chance that this plan will take hold and will be owned by everyone in the department from the top down. Okay, a question, other questions? Yes. Yes, Catherine?
Oh, I think Rudy was ahead of me, but I'll mine's just a quick question. I appreciate you're gonna put links on State Parks website. I was gonna encourage putting links on all the division departments, just from the standpoint stakeholders may, let's say boating person might go to DBW's website, but they may not go to the larger parks. So to the extent we can proliferate those links, I think that'll be great.
Yeah, that's all planned through the comms plan, and we'll be giving you plenty of notice ahead of time, so you'll be able to communicate with your partners and stakeholders as well. Yes, Rudy.
Steve, with respect to the division developing its own parallel strategic plan, staff would be able to rely on your people in doing that?
Yes, there's a division now in parks called Strategic Planning and Recreation Services. And it's headed by Alex Stahl. She's on the executive committee as well. And so that unit, that division, will own strategic planning and the implementation of the plan over the next 5 years. And so that, so yes, there will be a core group of folks in there that will be able to help all the divisions.
Great. Thank you.
It's on our list.
So if I could real quick, that strategic plan, it's really robust and well thought out. I think the goals are really well defined. What I like about it too is the engagement process. I've been a government employee for 27 years. I represent 169 job classifications in labor. And I can count the times on a hand I've ever been asked to comment or review or participate in an agency's strategic plan. So to seek out engagement at the level, it's really unique. And I think it really says a lot for what you guys are trying to accomplish. So I think it's very well done, really well conceived. Really, I also like the comment about being a living document, that it's open for change. You can be adjusted. You know, a lot of times they put it out there and you just roll with what it is.
Yes, thank you very much. And the idea is that every year you evaluate what's been accomplished and what hasn't, and what new things need to be on. So each year, then of the five, you wind up with not a new set, but a refined set based upon things that have occurred, the dramas that have occurred during the year. Thank you. All right. Any other questions?
Megan, I may have been cut out. Did we have anybody registered for public comment or any hands raised from the audience?
Yes, I do see one comment, one hand raised. So Jerry Desmond, I'm going to go ahead and unmute him. And Jerry, you should be unmuted.
Thank you, commissioners and department. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California, and certainly appreciate this kind of endeavor. And a couple of, I know it's just touching the surface, but first, we do see, especially as the commission's looking at what are the appropriate functions, services, programs, and the working group meeting that was held yesterday, workshops, that this certainly dovetails into that, the stakeholder process that will be convened, that we'll be participating in. And so we look forward to, at the right time and the right way, providing our input. And then just to mention one that is both perhaps a challenge and an opportunity that may be somewhat unique to DBW within state parks as a division, is that as we look at the future and addressing the issues that the commissioners are deciding, as they look at, you all look at it, the role and benefits of the division extend beyond state parks. We look at law enforcement on the waterways, that's beyond parks. We look at the public marina loan program, launching facilities. We look at the loans and grants to private marinas, aquatic invasive species. You know, a lot of those programs and services are way beyond the physical geographic limits. And so knowing that there will be a division specific plan within this could address those issues and also take care of, take advantage of the opportunities that are there for serving underserved populations, coming up new ways to appreciate and get on the waterways. So just that initial overview, overall, appreciate this kind of effort, certainly, and we'll be involved.
Thank you for that.
And if I could just kind of echo what something Mr. Desmond said, you're right. The effect of these things are they're interchangeable, because we have state park employees are different on the shore, but we have other agencies that interact on the water, and they're working cohesively together. So you're right, the effects go beyond just the department or the different divisions. It's wide ranging. So that's a really good point.
Yes, so partner stakeholders and other public organizations and private organizations, very important partners in this.
And did we have anybody else, Megan?
Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing anyone else, no.
And you had did you want to comment, Rudy?
Well, I did, just to be a broken record, and as long as I can keep the record player on, I am keenly interested in, I think Jerry just touched on it, he said perhaps underserved communities, but I'm keenly interested in promoting youth, getting them out there. And this probably goes back to sidelights from Pony League, Little League, whatever, junior golf, so on and so forth. In other words, getting off these screens and getting out in fresh air, as the director does with frequency. We all know the benefit. When we're generationally absent, it would be very satisfying to know that there's some concerted effort to get kids to know about these things and have an opportunity, whether they continue them or not, to get involved. And it's probably a department level thing, but I would just love to see some emphasis on that. I would not like to, and again, I'm lucky to be able to kind of manage this Zoom stuff, but I'm certainly glad in a way that my generation had that opportunity. I mean, the parents were quick to get us out in the streets to play in traffic, but by and large, it's beneficial.
Thank you. And thank you for your report, Mr. Selle.
Thank you.
So now we'll move on to agenda item number 8. Commission advice and comment. We'll hear from Lakeport BLF restroom replacement. Casey Caldwell from the Lakeport Launch Facility restroom replacement.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, and we have the presentation. All right, fantastic. Next slide, please. Good morning, Mr. Chair, fellow commissioners, Director Quintero, and everyone joining us today. My name is Casey Caldwell. I am a project manager in DBW's Grants and Loans Unit. And today it is my honor to present the City of Lakeport's request for a $135,250 construction grant from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund to replace two restrooms at the Lakeport Public Boat Launch Facility located in the City of Lakeport. The DBW grant would partially fund construction of one restroom and fully fund the other, and I will discuss those cost splits later. Here to represent the city is its project manager, Ron Ladd, and we are here to seek the Boating and Waterways Commission's advice and comment on the proposed project. At this time, we would like to queue up a brief video presentation from the city. Mr. Lloyd, do you have that available?
One moment.
The city of Lakeport is on the western shore of Clear Lake in Northern California. Clear Lake is the largest natural freshwater lake wholly within the state and is located 80 miles inland from the Pacific coast, 100 miles northwest of Sacramento, and 110 miles north of San Francisco. The boat launching facilities are centrally located in downtown Lakeport, one block east of Main Street. To reach Lakeport from Sacramento, take Interstate 5 North 49 miles to exit 578, turn left and head west on Highway 20 for 37 miles. At the traffic circle, take the second exit onto Highway 53 South. Continue for 8 miles, then turn right onto Highway 29 North. Continue for 20 miles. Clear Lake is about 8 miles wide, 20 miles long, with over 100 miles of shoreline. The lake surface area is about 68 square miles at a surface elevation of 1,326 feet. The lake is shallow along the shoreline and gradually deepens to an average depth of approximately 24 feet. The seasonal water level fluctuates about 3 feet. During a normal rainfall year, the water level fluctuates very little. The majority of communities around Clear Lake are small, rural townships with populations of less than 3,500. The city of Lakeport and Clear Lake are the only two incorporated cities in Lake County. Lakeport, the county seat of Lake County, serves as one of the regional focal points for tourism. At First Street, there is a two-lane boat ramp with boarding docks. North of the ramp and just to the west, there is a parking area, children's playground, grassy shoreline, and the First Street restroom. The restroom near the First Street ramp is used by recreational boaters, but most of its users arrive in the area to utilize the playground and park. The city recently constructed courtesy docks at this ramp to encourage lake tourism and patronage of the city's downtown area.
At Third Street, there is another two-lane boat ramp and a boater parking lot with about 15 spaces for vehicle trailers and another 15 spaces for single vehicles. The restroom at this location is used almost exclusively by recreational boaters launching and retrieving vessels. The Fifth Street boat ramp is two blocks north of the Third Street ramp. The First Street boat ramp was built around 1950. The Third Street boat launching facility was constructed in 1984 with renovations in 1997 and 2004. The restrooms at both First and Third Street were constructed in 1979 and have not been replaced. The Lakeport boat launching facility, which includes the First, Third, and Fifth Street ramps, is open 24 hours a day and free to the public. Access to the facility is not controlled. Motorized and non-motorized vessels are launched from this facility. All the ramps are used primarily by motorized boaters. The facility is located near the Business District and Library Park. The First Street restroom is used by visitors conducting a variety of activities. The city estimates about one quarter of its users at First Street are recreational boaters. Other users visit the area to frequent downtown businesses and other nearby recreational amenities. The Third Street restrooms are located next to the boat ramp and are used almost exclusively by recreational boaters. Recreational activities in Lakeport include fishing, boating, water skiing, jet skiing, sailing, boat racing, and swimming. There are many special events held throughout the year in and around Lakeport, including numerous fishing tournaments, the Heron Festival, the Seaplane Splash-In, the Summer Concert Series, Independence Day Street Fair and Fireworks Show, the Lake County Rodeo, Taste of Lake County, and the Lake County Fair. These activities and many others combined with the mild climate attract numerous visitors from the San Francisco Bay Area, the Sacramento Valley, and the Pacific Coast. The City of Lakeport partners with several state and local agencies. The annual number of motorized boat launches at the existing facility is estimated at 10,000. The number of non-motorized boat launches is 2,000. The city estimates that the annual number of motorized boat launches at the improved facility will increase by 30% to 13,000 launches per year, and the number of non-motorized launches will increase by 50% to 3,000 launches per year. Division of Boating and Waterways conservatively estimates that these numbers will grow more slowly by 5% to 10,500 and 2,100 respectively. Based on the California Boating Needs Assessment Study published in 2002, the area average for numbers of users per boat at Clear Lake is 4.84. Therefore, the current estimated annual number of user days is 48,400 motorized and 2,000 non-motorized. Division of Boating and Waterways estimates that the annual user days for this facility will increase by 5% for motorized to 50,820 and increase by 5% for non-motorized to 2,100. The 2019 Boating Needs Assessment Study estimated a base user day value. This value, adjusted for consumer price index, is $38.90 per user. The total current annual user day value for this facility is about $1.9 million. Division of Boating and Waterways estimates that the total annual user day value for the proposed facility will increase after the facility is improved to just over $2 million. A common method in the analysis of investments is to establish net present value of the benefits and costs associated with the project. If the benefit-cost ratio exceeds 1, then the investment weighed against the available investment alternatives is worthy of consideration from a financial perspective. The results of this analysis are as follows. The total net benefits over the 20-year life of the project are estimated to be just over $1.5 million. Net costs over the 20-year grant period are estimated to be $198,000. Assuming a total project cost of $198,000 to complete construction, the benefit-cost ratio is 8.04. The city does not currently charge any fees for usage of the site and does not intend to charge in the future. The boat launch facility is in an underserved and economically challenged area. Expenditures associated with boating and outdoor recreation create jobs and other economic activity throughout the county. The lakefront area plays a critical role in the city of Lakeport's identity while providing a wide range of recreation opportunities for residents and visitors, and an important environmental resource for wildlife. Previously awarded boating and waterway grant funds include, in 1975, a $178,000 grant was awarded to improve the Fifth Street launch facility by widening the ramp to two lanes, installing a boarding float, a parking area, and landscaping. In 1988, $139,000 was awarded to develop two parcels between 3rd and 5th Street for a 22-space parking area with walkways, lighting, and landscaping. In 1996, a $573,000 grant was awarded to improve the 3rd Street launch facility by reconstruction and expansion of the boat ramp, installation of boarding docks, shoreline protection, parking, landscaping, lighting, signs, and amenities. In 1999, a $400,000 grant was awarded to supplement the 1996 grant due to project bids coming in well over budget. The proposed grant provides funding for the construction to rehabilitate the Lakeport Boat Launching Facility. If approved, this grant would contribute up to $135,250 to construct the following scope items. Restrooms. Demolish two existing dilapidated restrooms and install two new prefabricated two-unit flush restroom facilities. Division of Boating and Waterways will pay all construction costs for the 3rd Street restroom and 25% of construction costs for the 1st Street restroom, reflecting the proportion of its anticipated use by recreational boaters. The city will pay for demolition of the old restrooms and required site work. If the commission has any questions, please feel free to contact our park foreman, Ron Ladd. Thank you, and we appreciate your consideration.
Excellent. Thank you. We can get the...
Megan, do we have anybody slated for public comment?
I still have a brief presentation to give
myself. Oh, I apologize.
No problem at all. Mr. Ladd, thank you for that presentation. Commissioners, you no doubt noticed that that presentation covered a lot of the same details that I would normally cover myself in my own presentation. So I will avoid too much repetition in my own remarks. Just setting the stage again briefly to remind us where we are. City of Lakeport is at the red marker near the center of this slide, just east of Highway 101 and about 2 hours northwest of Sacramento. Next slide, please. Pictured here, we have an aerial view of the boat launch facility's location near the main business district in the city of Lakeport. The BLF is just a couple of blocks east of Main Street, which is the main wide street in the middle of the slide, going up and down. And it includes three boat launch ramps at the right of the picture. The First Street launching facility is at the bottom right of the picture in the water. The Third Street ramp is the middle right, and then the Fifth Street ramp is the top right. Next slide, please. This is an aerial view of the First Street location in the foreground at the yellow pin. The First Street launch ramp is in the lower middle of this picture, and the restrooms are a short walk from the ramp itself. There's some parking over to the left, and there's more boating-specific parking to the north. A local park called Library Park is situated north of the restroom, and that park takes up a big amount of the middle of the slide. It's a big park. Existing facility components besides the restroom are in good shape with lots of remaining useful life, so those will not be improved through this grant. Next slide, please. Here we have the Third Street location. The existing restroom is at the yellow pin, and the launch ramp is just to the right of that. To the left is additional boater parking. And again, the Third Street ramp itself is in good shape, so no need to make upgrades there beyond the restroom itself. Next slide, please. This is a picture of the First Street restroom. As Mr. Ladd noted in his presentation, this restroom was installed in 1979, and the restroom itself is functional, but its fixtures are old and deteriorating. Next slide, please. This is the interior of the First Street restroom, and you can see that the city is doing a really good job of keeping the visitor-facing components of the restroom in great shape. Everything looks wonderful. Everything works well from the front side. Next slide, please. Here's the back side of the restroom, and this is a little bit not in as great shape. You can see the plumbing is a bit of a maze. There's deterioration visible on some of the pipes, and the city reports that maintenance is difficult, which is believable given the complexity we're seeing here. Next slide, please. This is the interior or the exterior of the Third Street restroom. Like the First Street facility, this was constructed in 1979. And the state of repair is basically the same as the First Street facility with good visitor facing amenities, but increasingly difficult to maintain plumbing. Next slide, please. A picture from the interior of the Third Street restroom showing condition of current fixtures. Again, the city is doing a very good job of maintaining the visitor facing amenities. Next slide, please. And the maintenance closet from the Third Street restroom, you can see the dilapidated condition of the plumbing fixtures. This also functions for now, but you can see corrosion on the pipes, labyrinth layout of the pipes. Upgrade would definitely be helpful for the maintenance staff of the city. Next slide, please. So here we have a cost estimate for the First Street restroom, and I'll show you the separate estimate for the Third Street restroom in just a moment. As the city's presentation explained, the area around First Street attracts various audiences pursuing different activities. The DBW and the city both understand that the visitation of the First Street restrooms is generally 25% recreational boaters and 75% people who are there for other reasons like visiting Library Park or visiting nearby downtown businesses. So for installation of this restroom, we are proposing to split costs of that 25-75 ratio. One quarter of the restroom construction costs by DBW, the rest by the city, and that's that prefabricated restroom installation line just above the construction subtotal line on this spreadsheet. DBW would bear all the soft costs like design and inspection and permitting, and the city will pay for necessary pre-construction work, including demolition of the old restroom and preparing the site for the new restroom. The city also intends to install the slab and utilities for the new restroom, but the city or DBW would pay for the materials. And we'll handle those same costs the same way First Street and Third Street, just for ease of administration of the grant. Next slide, please. Now here's the cost estimate for Third Street restroom. In this case, DBW would be paying the entire $68,000 for the restroom itself. Restroom is located right next to the boat ramp, so we're not seeing likelihood of a mix of use types here as opposed to the First Street location. Next slide, please. A few projections about use of the renovated facility. Again, the city touched on this in its presentation, so I will be brief here. The city expects the BLF to become more attractive to boaters with these restroom improvements and for usage to gradually increase over the 20 years following construction. The DBW estimates conservatively when we're doing our own forecasting, so we projected a modest 5% increase in usage in the short run over the present usage figures. And it is worth noting the facility charges no parking fees, no usage fees, so the increased usage itself is the key driver of the overall project benefits here. And the benefit cost ratio is 8.04. That's owing to the fact that the costs of the project are relatively low and usage of the site over time will eventually greatly exceed what it would be in a no project condition should the current restrooms ultimately become impractical to keep in operation. Next slide, please. So with the foregoing in mind, DBW seeks advice and comment on this proposed $135,250 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund construction grant to the City of Lakeport for the Lakeport Boat Launching Facility improvements described in the June 10th, 2021 feasibility report. This completes my presentation, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your time, and we welcome your questions.
Now, let me ask Megan, is anybody slated for public comment?
Let me take a look here. So far, I'm not seeing any public comments. Would just like to remind listeners that if they're calling in by phone, star 9 to use the raise hand feature. But Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing anyone, so I believe the commission is good to give their comments.
So commissioners, any comments, questions? Please feel free to speak. sign.
Mr. Garrett, may I?
Please.
I guess a comment and a question. I guess the comment is, you know, I can't redo a bathroom here in my house for $136,000. So it seems like pretty good value for dollar. But that's a comment that kind of leads to my question, which would be, I couldn't help but notice in the, I guess it was 1997 to 2000, grant process that kind of the bid was way out of whack, and it required a supplement grant a year or two later in almost the exact amount of the original grant. So that I guess what I'm saying is it leads me to have concerns that this is, that this very low number is perhaps not in alignment with reality. And I don't know who to address that question to. Is that you? I'm pointing at the screen, so I don't guess
that. I'll start, and I'll invite Karen Dill to comment in just a second, but we do have a construction contingency built into the grant of 10%. We do have experience building restrooms at various facilities, both DBW and State Parks in general. So we do have a pretty good way to baseline what we expect these to cost. Karen, I'll invite you to jump in here.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really great point, Tom. And what we've seen across California, particularly in the last 3 years with the fires, construction costs have grown exponentially, at least 30% over the last 3 years. We did have the city go back, and they actually got quotes from manufacturers. These restrooms are prefabricated, so they're not dependent on what's happening in with local construction staffing, which a lot of our other projects are. The prefab are built in their fabrication facilities. Costs for concrete, though, they are going up a little bit. They're more stable than wood, for instance, which has gone up 100% in the last 4 months. So your point is really valid. It's a challenge that we've had on a lot of our projects recently. But on this one, we're generally confident that we can come in with that within budget on those two restrooms. And then Lakeport, they have staffing there that's going to help construct the pad and put everything, connect all of the plumbing and whatnot. So really good point, but we're trying to mitigate this on this project.
That was actually led very well into my second point, which is there, and I understand it's a very small grant, so it's, you know, we don't want to overanalyze anything, but was there any sense of analysis of the non-residential use of the facility? So I understood on First Street, that basically sounds like the local playground, and that's where people hang out, and the city's going to pay for that. But for the Third Street facility, what they're asking the state to pay for is, a more generalized use. And the idea being that perhaps that's more open or used by non-locals. So is there any sense at all from the analysis of how much of this are the city, the citizens of Lakeport using it?
In our analysis, we don't generally discriminate local boaters from outside resident boaters. What we do look at is boaters versus non-boaters, and that's the differentiation on the First Street where we're splitting the cost 25% to 75%, because the local boaters, they pay into the fund. I'm not sure how to describe that, but on the Third Street boat launch, that facility is used, there might be 5% non-recreational boater usage, if that helps to answer your question.
It's more of a curiosity than anything. And then just, I'm taking a lot of the commission's time, so the last one's really quick.
Sure.
What is the anticipated lifespan of a prefab bathroom? I mean, it sounds pretty, you know, these aren't porta potties. I've never heard of a prefab drop-in bathroom. I mean, what's the anticipated lifespan?
At least 20 years. What we're seeing on some old ones are 30 years. What has changed with old restrooms is ADA. The older prefab restrooms that we've used at a lot of state parks didn't have the ADA requirements that new ones have had. So old ones that we're replacing now, it's generally over the last 20 years, they have gotten their construction methodologies down so that the chase area in the back where all the plumbing comes in, I expect these restrooms to last 30 years.
I'll put one in front of my house. I'm done. Thank you.
Go ahead, Rudy. I'm sorry, I was on mute.
No problem. With compliments to staff and to city staff, move support for the project.
Let's go ahead and wait till we get to with public comment first. Any other commissioners have any comments? Megan, do we have anybody set up for public comment?
Let me see here. I don't believe so. Let me just double check. I'm not seeing anyone raising their hand.
I just had a quick question. So the bathroom, it's a single unit bathroom, correct? I just want to make sure I understand correctly.
Two unit.
And is it unisex or is it male? How is it divided? Or
two unit unisex, sir.
Okay, perfect. And you said I guess the ADA compliance would almost be a must. I mean, there's almost no way you could not be ADA compliant. But that would be one of the things that would prohibit the renovation of it, correct? It's probably easier to just get the new prefabricated bathroom and replace what's there instead of trying to renovate. But I would imagine it's essentially a dilapidated bathroom at this point.
I mean, basically, yeah, the ADA assets, to my understanding, are covered through the grant. So it'll be part of the process.
And so, and for Karen, what you said, you guys don't differentiate the boaters between locals and non-locals. That would be a very difficult mechanism to try to figure out as well, I'm assuming, because how far out are they? 10 miles away? They're not a local? Are they don't, you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine how easy that would be accomplished to try to determine if you're a local or not using the water. Because you're not checking in, you're not paying. There's no gate to access. It's just kind of whoever shows up and uses the waterway.
Yeah, you're right, Chairman. It's we haven't been asked that question before, but it would be a challenge to do that.
And so the purpose, they don't collect any type of fees. Is that to just encourage people to come out and use the waterway, or they don't have parking meters or anything, it sounds like?
Mr. Ladd,
we have no fees at all.
And is it mostly because you're relying on the kind of, I guess, the activity money that's generated from just being in the park kind of outpaces what you would get by any type of entrance fee or parking?
That's correct. Right now we have a huge bass tournament that's going on now. The parking lots are jammed with these super expensive bass boats and the people that come in from out of town. So the economic driver outweighs any fees that we would charge and possibly lose those tournaments.
I've actually been there when that was going on. I was shocked how many people were there at the lake. Just a massive crowd that it draws in. So I think with that, I don't know if one of our commissioners is possibly offline at the moment. I will ask for a motion for consent.
There's a motion on the floor, I think.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, I will ask for Megan to do a roll call vote.
Thank you, Chair Ehrman. And I just wanted to clarify with our legal counsel, Commissioner Pettibone did have to step away. So I just want to confirm that we can go ahead with the motion. Okay. All right.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So I am going to go ahead and start with Commissioner Murillo.
Support.
Support. Okay, Commissioner Hawkins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Support. Commissioner Peer, how do you vote?
Support.
Support. Chair Ehrman, how do you vote?
I vote support.
Support. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
I just like to jump in to thank the commission for their time, and particularly some of the boating and waterway staff. Casey, Karen, and Joe Dukes were a big help to us navigating the online grant process and making sure that we had our submission all put together correctly. So thank you, everyone, for your help.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to thank Casey Culver for your presentation, too. Thank you. Very well done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So at this point, it is now 11:10. We will be taking a 15-minute break, and we will reconvene at 11:25.
Chair Ehrman, it is 11:25, and we are broadcasting a recording.
Okay, so we are moved to reconvene. I believe we have all the commissioners but one back. So we're good to proceed then, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we are back on. Next agenda item, we're going to go to division program reports. So at this time, we're going to hear from departmental staff Brian Carroll regarding law enforcement maritime training.
Good morning, Chair Ehrman, fellow commissioners, and Director Quintero. My name is Brian Carroll, and I serve to facilitate the Marine Law Enforcement Training Program for the Division of Boating Waterways. The training program provides courses statewide to law enforcement officers, Harbor Patrol officers, lifeguards, and others that work in a Marine Patrol environment. Statewide training ensures uniform enforcement of boating laws on all of California's waterways. With more than 100 local government agencies providing boating law enforcement in California, the purpose of the training program is to provide comprehensive, current, and effective training courses with reliable consistency. Pictured here on this slide is one of our instructors teaching students how to perform a carriage inspection while conducting a mock enforcement stop during one of our inland boat operations courses held in Sacramento, right on the Sacramento River, right outside of our headquarters here. And a carriage requirement inspection includes checking for life jackets, type 4 throwable, fire extinguisher, and a sound emitting device. Next slide, please. Statistics for the training program are recorded on a federal fiscal year, because that's how the division reports statistics back to the United States Coast Guard. So for fiscal year 2020, that would be October 1, 2019 to September 30, 2020. So during this time, we operated the training program on a $437,000 budget. And with that, that funding was obtained from the United States Coast Guard Federal Trust Fund for Boating Safety. And with that, we were able to train 319 officers in 25 classes covering 8 separate disciplines. We did have a sharp decrease in federal fiscal 20 in our training statistics just because of the COVID-19 related restrictions that were in place. 10 classes needed to be canceled, and that resulted in approximately 87 officers not receiving training for that period of time. Pictured here on this slide, training vessels are transiting through the port of Los Angeles. They are en route to open water in order to practice underway operations during the basic maritime officers course, and that is hosted by the Maritime Law Enforcement Training Center down in Wilmington. Next slide, please. So during fiscal year 20, the division had to implement COVID-19 guidelines and secure necessary PPE as most everybody did. But with this, we were still able to train approximately 78% of the average number of officers that we typically train in a fiscal year. So we consider that a success. Also during this time, the division added 4 new instructors to the training cadre. From Calaveras County Sheriff's Office, we added a sergeant to the Inland Boat Operations Course cadre. From San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office, we added a deputy to the Boating Under the Influence cadre. And from San Joaquin, we also recruited a deputy for the Boating Accident Investigation Course. In addition, we recruited a sergeant from Tuolumne County Sheriff's Office for the Boating Accident Investigation Course. I just wanted to point out that it is through the maintaining of these partnerships with local agencies throughout the state that the division is able to offer so many high quality classes. Instructors remain on agency time, and the division reimburses their travel expenses. Partnering with all these agencies allows us to offer the highest quality training possible by utilizing subject matter experts from throughout the state. Pictured on this slide is the Rescue Boat Operations Course held in Marina Del Rey, hosted by the Los Angeles County Lifeguards. This particular exercise is simulating underway patient transfer from the Los Angeles County Lifeguard vessel to the U.S. Coast Guard helicopter. Next slide, please. Goals for fiscal year 21. We want to expand the Boating Under the Influence course from 3 days to 4 days. This is going to allow us additional practice time in administering the standardized field sobriety tests. And we're going to add a report writing component to the curriculum. We're also going to develop a first responders course. And that's going to be to meet the needs of non-sworn officers working in a Marine Patrol environment. And in order to evaluate ongoing needs, we will continue to meet with partnering agencies by attending the California Boating Safety Officers Association and the California State Sheriff's Association Boating Subcommittee Training Symposiums. Pictured here is the Inland Boat Operator Course held in Sassoon. This delivery was hosted by the Solano County Sheriff's Office. And here these students are practicing close quarter maneuvering in the Sassoon Slough. Final slide, please. This is my contact information. If anybody has any questions or wants to discuss training in further detail, are there any questions today for the commission meeting?
Hey, Megan, do we have any public comments?
I am just giving people a few seconds. I'm not seeing any public comments, Chair Herman.
Questions or comments from commissioners? I have a couple just quick questions. Brian Carroll, that when the classes you offer, do they traditionally, like most classes, do they usually fill up relatively quickly? Is there a robust demand for these training courses?
Absolutely, sir. So the calendar gets released 11-1 the prior year for the following calendar year. And within the first week, 2 weeks, a majority of the classes are actually already filled up. So if agencies wait, 6 months down the road, I'd like to take a class.
it's going to be hard pressed to get in. There are, you know, cancellations sometimes and everything, but yeah, the classes are definitely in high demand.
And the Marine, law enforcement Marine training, these are post classes, correct?
All post certified classes, yes, sir.
So the city and counties are getting post reimbursement, which allows them to attend, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that's all. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Any other comments from the commissioners? Okay, well, thank you for your report, your presentation.
You're welcome.
So at this time, we'll hear from Department Staff Parrish Shaw for Hire Operators Vessel Licensing Program and for Hire Carrier Program.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Parrish Shaw. I'm the administrator for the For Hire Vessel Operator Licensing Program and the For Hire Vessel Carrier Insurance Verification Certificate Program. The first program I will update you on today is the For Hire Vessel Operator Licensing Program. Next slide, please. A For Hire Operator license is required by vessel operators who carry more than 3 passengers for compensation in non-navigable waters, non-navigable waters being those that do not lead to the ocean. Typical For Hire license holders are held by individuals who operate vessels for fishing excursions, summer camps, tours, water taxis, water skiing services, and other related activities. DBW has contracted with retired Lieutenant Douglas Powell, who holds a 110 captain's license through the United States Coast Guard, to proctor written and practical exams. The For Hire Vessel Operator Licensing Program has a budget of $10,000, which is used to proctor exams each year. These funds are allocated using harbors and watercraft funds. Next slide, please. We currently have 327 active For Hire Vessel operators throughout the state. During federal fiscal year 2020, DBW issued 22 new licenses and 13 renewal licenses. Due to the pandemic, the division saw a 41% decline in applicants. During COVID-19 pandemic, we postponed proctoring exams in the months of March, April, and May of 2020. As of June 2020, the division was able to purchase personal protective equipment, along with following state and county health department guidelines, in order to resume exam proctoring with new safety protocols in place. Due to the governor's orders, we halted examinations again for December 2020, January 2021, and February 2021. However, we were able to resume examinations again in March of 2021. We continue to proctor exams statewide. Next slide, please. The other program I administer is the For Hire Vessel Carrier Insurance Verification Certificate Program. Next slide, please. For Hire Vessel Carriers perform passenger transportation services for compensation, such as fishing charters, sightseeing tours, dinner cruises, etc. The division requires every For Hire Vessel company to procure adequate insurance for protection against liability and payment of damages for personal bodily injuries, including death resulting from those services and property damage as a result of an accident. Certificates are good for 1 calendar year, January 1st through December 31st, and all applicants must renew each December for the next calendar year. The fee for new and renewal licenses is $25. As you may recall from my last update, the program was transferred to DBW from the Public Utilities Commission July 1st, 2018. The Public Utilities Commission transferred 74 registrants to DBW, and out of the 74 companies, 63 renewed with the division. Next slide, please. Since the division took over the program almost 3 years ago, we have acquired 165 new applicants. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the division lost 24 For Hire Vessel Carrier companies due to company closures and the selling of businesses. We currently have 228 active For Hire Vessel Carrier companies. Next slide, please. DBW will be operating under the Public Utilities Commission general orders until the division is able to establish our own. We will continue to reach out to For Hire Vessel Carrier companies to inform them of program guidelines and requirements, and we continue to work diligently and partner with commercial marine insurance companies to educate them on For Hire insurance requirements. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Megan, do we have anybody registered for public comment or question?
Herman, I am not seeing anybody, no.
Okay, commissioners? Go ahead, Tom. You're on mute, though.
There I am. I don't know. One of these days I'll figure this whole thing out. So just really more about curiosity than anything else. Is there any kind of tonnage limit when you're having this vessel operator permit in non-navigable waters?
No.
And so I guess what I'm curious about is they had that horrible tragedy on that lake in, I forget where it was. It was in Indiana or something. And they had the duck boat.
Right.
Right? You recall this?
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it was in Michigan.
30 people drowned.
Right.
So maybe you can just inform me on how rope. So I'm hearing anything over 3 passengers, no tonnage limit. So I could get this thing for 3 passengers and then drive a duck boat. Would that be accurate?
Well, you would have to take an examination, and then you would have to take a practical on the water examination as well. So you take a written and an on the water to make sure that you have the capabilities to handle the vessel.
Okay. So, but just to clarify, so if I have a little 5-person boat, that's the exact same licensing requirement as, say, for example, taking out a duck boat that might have 40 people on it.
Right, but it would depend on what type of waterway you were operating on. So the U.S. Coast Guard would license.
We're all non-op. I understand all that. Okay. So we're non-navigable now. So right. I understand.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, that's just very interesting. I'm just wondering how robust that exam is, because I know Coast Guard certifications are very robust and require many, many hours on the water.
Right.
Yeah, and do those limits apply in this type of licensing setting? In other words, do I have to have 10,000 hours before I get to operate?
You have to have a year of experience operating on that particular vessel on those particular waterways that you are applying the license for.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Any other commissioners' questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Parashaw, for your presentation. So next we'll hear from Monica Cabral, Jill Bennett, and Michael Beals with Yachts and Shipbrokers Salespersons Licensing and Enforcement Programs.
Good morning. My name is Monique Cabral, and I am the Licensing Administrator in Yacht and Ship. Today I will be updating you on the Yacht and Shipbroker Licensing Program. Next slide, please. Yacht brokers are individuals who engage in the selling, purchasing, renting, and negotiating the prices of vessels for sale. Next slide, please. The law mandates Division of Boating and Waterways to license and regulate yacht and ship brokers and salespersons in California. DBW enforces activities of licensees to ensure compliance and provide consumer protection. Next slide, please. In order to apply for a yacht and ship broker's license in California, a person must be at least 18 years of age and meet one of the minimum qualifications below. They have to have been employed as a California licensed yacht and ship salesperson for 1 year within the last 5 years, or a California licensed yacht broker, or they have owned and operated a marine business in California for the last 3 continuous years, or they have been a broker or salesperson in another state for the last 3 continuous years. Most individuals that apply for a broker's license are salespeople that are currently licensed with us. Next slide, please. The division issues 3 types of broker licenses, individual, partnership, and corporate. A corporation must be registered with the California Secretary of State in order for a department to issue a broker's license to that corporate entity. Next slide, please. Currently, the fee for a new broker's license is $200 and $25 for the examination fee. There are currently 339 active brokers in California. Next slide, please. This is my contact information, which can also be found on DBW's website. This concludes my presentation. Are there any questions regarding this program?
Megan, any public comments or questions registered?
Chair Ehrman, I am not seeing any public comments.
Comments or questions from the commissioners? I have a quick one. Is there a regulatory body within the Department of Boating and Waterways that investigates or regulates the industry in itself if reports of fraud or whatever resulting from the sale of or the brokering of yachts? Do you guys have an internal mechanism to deal with that?
Yes, we do. That will be one of the upcoming presentations.
Okay, perfect. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you for your time today. And I would now like to introduce our newest crew member, Jill Bennett. She is our salesperson's licensing administrator.
Good morning. My name is Jill Bennett, and I am the new licensing administrator for salespeople in the Yacht and Ship Program. I've been with the division for 4 months, working previously with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Today, I'm going to update you on the status of licensing for salespeople for yachts and ships. What is a salesperson? So in this presentation, a salesperson refers to an individual that works for a licensed yacht broker in California. Brokers must enter into a broker-to-salesperson agreement when bringing any salesperson on board. This agreement will clearly state their commission breakdown and the expected salesperson job duties and responsibilities. Brokers cannot compensate any individual that is not a licensed salesperson. Next slide, please. So to qualify to be a salesperson, applicants must be sponsored by a licensed California yacht and ship broker. They must be at least 18 years of age, and applicants must clear a background check conducted by the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Next slide, please. Salesperson's licensing fees. So new salesperson licensing fees total $150, and that includes their permanent license, which is valid for 1 year, a temporary license valid for 60 days, and their exam fee. Other fees include a license renewal fee, a 1 or 2 year option, license reinstatement fees, a 1 or 2 year option, and a $10 transfer fee, which is applicable when a salesperson transfers from one broker to another. Next slide, please. Our unit proctors licensing examinations once a month at 3 separate locations within California: Sacramento, San Clemente, and San Diego. Exams have 100 multiple choice questions, and to pass, the applicant must achieve at least a 70% score. The exams include, but are not limited to, questions regarding licensing, vessel operation and regulation, and the vessel sale process. If an applicant fails an exam, they can retake the exam up to 3 times per application. Next slide, please. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, licensing exams were postponed beginning March 2020 through June 2020. We resumed examinations in July 2020, but then due to an increase of COVID cases, mandated state guidelines postponed the exams once again, December 2020 through January 2021. But I do have some good news. As of February 2021, we have reinstated exams at all 3 testing sites. License examinations are now being offered following state and county health department guidelines, including thorough sanitation of the testing sites before and after the examinations, 6-foot social distancing, and a temperature check on all applicants. Next slide, please. So our accomplishments. As of April 2021, all 3 exam sites are caught up with 6 months worth of postponed exams. And in the last year, 119 new sales licenses have been issued. That's a 27% increase from the previous year, with a total of 596 active yacht salesperson's licenses. Okay, final slide, please. So this concludes my presentation today. Are there any questions?
Hearing none,
None? Okay. Then I would like to thank you for listening. And now I would like to introduce our investigator in the enforcement unit, Mr. Michael Beals.
Good morning. My name is Michael Beals. I'm the enforcement investigator for a yacht and ship and the boating safety unit. And next slide, please. So there's three main enforcement components. First is ensuring regulatory compliance. This is mainly done through brokerage inspections. Inspections can be either physical site inspections of the brokerage office, or they can be a remote audit, which has been especially prevalent with COVID. And then next is investigating consumer complaints about yacht and ship licensees. Once I verify it's actually in our jurisdiction, because sometimes people send in complaints about new boat sellers or people selling their own boat. Once I verify it's within our jurisdiction, I have a legislative mandate to conduct an investigation. And then the third component is monitoring for and responding to unlicensed activity. Next slide, please. So the department enforces Yacht and Ship Brokers Act through multiple levels of intervention. The levels of intervention depend on multiple factors. These include the type of violation, seriousness of the violation, repeat offenses, the person's knowledge of the harbor navigation codes, et cetera. The lowest level of intervention is education. Education normally comes in the form of corrective guidance. This can be in cease and desist letters or warning letters. Then the assessment of civil penalties is the intermediate level of intervention. These penalties are assessed under the authority of Harbors and Navigation Code 739. Penalties can vary from 100 to 1500 per each count, but the typical assessed amount for a first-time penalty is $500 for each separate count. And then the most severe level of intervention is referring a matter to the Attorney General. The Attorney General will argue the matter before an administrative law judge. They can assess a higher penalty. They can recoup all costs related to the case. And then they also have the ability to bring criminal charges, since all codes under the article are classified as misdemeanors under Harbor Navigation Code 738. Next slide, please. So the following list comes from statistics gathered since the last commission update. They're current to June 1st, 2021. I believe all the commissioners may have been provided some information that's a little outdated. I apologize for that, but these are the most updated numbers here. So there have been 3 consumer cases received. No cases are currently pending. 28 cease and desist orders have been issued. 32 physical inspections, 13 remote audits, 15 of which resulted in penalty assessments totaling $22,100. I'm sorry, 11 remote audits. 15 of which resulted in penalty assessments totaling $22,100. Of that, $13,100 has been collected to date. Next slide, please. So there's my contact information. Are there any questions?
Again, Megan, anybody registered for public comment or question?
Let's see. Erman, I am not seeing any public comments at this time.
Any commissioners' comments or questions? I would just say to Mr. Doogie, you don't get a lot of complaints, so that makes me really confident with dealing with the industry. I would assume there'd be a lot more, but you don't get a lot, so it's a pretty well-regulated industry, so that's really good to hear. So with that, I just want to thank Monique Carbajal, Jill Bennett, and Michael Beals for their presentation. So next, at this time, we'll hear from Department Staff Joanna Andrade for Boating Accident Report Program and Law Enforcement Financial Aid Program.
Good morning. My name is Joanna Andrade, and I am the Program Administrator for the Recreational Boating Accident Program and the Boating Safety and Enforcement Financial Aid Program. Today, I'll be leading my presentation with the Recreational Boating Accident Program. Next slide, please. The reporting of boating accidents to the U.S. Coast Guard is one of several activities that the division must perform in order to receive federal funding for our boating safety programs. The division also uses the data collected by the boating accidents to direct activities such as our education and outreach, media campaign, law enforcement, and aquatic center program. Next slide. Boaters are required to report when a person dies or disappears, when there is an injury sustained beyond first aid, or when property damage is over 500, or there is a complete loss of a vessel. Law enforcement is also required to report if they receive grant funding or respond to a fatality. Accident data received by the division is protected under Section 656 of the Harbors and Navigation Code. Our data is limited to statistical analysis only. Next slide. The division collects boating accidents in two manners. The public completes the boating accident report form, which we refer to as the BAR. A portion of this form was seen on the previous slide. Local law enforcement, fire departments, and harbor masters use the boating accident database, which was launched in August of 2019. We are currently teaching law enforcement whom attend the boating accident investigation class how to use the database and best practices. The division works closely with the database contractor and the end user to make enhancements and ensure it meets all federal reporting requirements. Next slide. This chart shows a 5-year historical accident, injury, and fatality totals collected by DBW. As you can see, accident totals fluctuate from year to year. In 2019, there were 451 accidents, 207 injuries, and 41 fatalities. In 2020, there were 638 accidents, 321 injuries, and 41 fatalities. And next slide. DBW participates in one of many NASBLAS policy committees. This particular committee I participate in is referred to as the Engineering Reporting and Analysis Committee. The committee identifies, evaluates, and analyzes recreational boating data and other related information that can shed lights on factors associated with boating accidents and be used to inform the development of state and national level safety policies, programs, and campaigns, and ultimately be used to measure their effectiveness. That concludes the portion of the recreational boating accident program. Before I move on to the next program, are there any questions?
I had a question. So going through the boating needs assessment and obviously seeing the increase in accidents, I wonder, you know, if there's any discussion, especially at the national level, about what's driving this. I mean, we've seen obviously people are going to the waterways, so there's increased usage, but I just wonder, you know, about some of the outcomes and what we think maybe going forward. The boating needs assessment talked about, especially from the non-motorized community, a lot of experience with dangerous driving on personal watercrafts and lack of maybe education. And I just wondered if you had any comments on that.
I don't have any comments specifically on regards to that. Ramona, do you have any comments with regards to boating need assessment? And
sure. So I think one of the things, let's see, your question was, did one of the areas at the national level, so from the national and the NASBLA, which what Joanna mentioned, the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators is, so for those of you that are fairly new to our commission, is a nonprofit organization that has contracted and works closely with the U.S. Coast Guard. So they collectively work close with all of the states gathering data. And so I know that in particular committees that they have established, they are looking at, you know, trends in those types of what you mentioned of those non-motorized users that have been that are now competing, or the motorized competing with the non-motorized on our waterways. So I know at the national level, because, you know, obviously the increase of non-motorized has been, it's national. So they have started a paddle sport committee, and from a national perspective, looking at all of the trends. In California, we'd probably have to look into our talk to our law enforcement on, you know, I think on issues related to the two, I know in our education and outreach, though, that we do, you know, message and educate both non-motorized and motorized on, you know, the safety and importance, because we do hear from the motorized kind of that opposite of, you know, the non-motorized don't know what they're doing out there. And so, you know, they need to be educated. So I think part of that is, you know, ensuring that we are out there in educating the, we have an ABCs, ABC for boaters, which is the basic. So we definitely encourage that in our messaging, and to ensure that, you know, when you get out on the waterways, so that you know the rules of the road when you're out there. So
that's helpful. I had a constituent here in the Sacramento area, you know, raising concerns about Lake Natomas, used to be non-motorized and is now being, has been opened up to fishing boats. And there are groups who want to open it up to, and this is obviously where we have big, big rowing competitions, et cetera, but there are those who want to open it up to water skiing and full power boating, which obviously will create real conflict in that particular body of water. So it is something that is percolating, I think, probably throughout the state.
Right. And I think, you know, more so, I'm sure, I'm not sure if you all have heard the incident that happened at Oroville of the gentleman that was, well, because he was driving the PWC, but was run over by a boater who left the scene. So I think, you know, as these accidents continue, this, you know, that we'll be hearing more about educating and understanding, or getting the word out on educating on rules of the road of, you know, waterways.
Rudy, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A quick question. Do we have, we drive up and down the freeways, we see the report impaired drivers in real time. Is there anything akin to that on the waterways, report drunken sailors or whatever?
To my knowledge, we haven't, since I've been in the program, haven't done any outreach campaigns such as that, providing statistics. I know we do, like Ramona mentioned in her report, other statistics or other campaigns for education. I don't know if Ramona knows if historically we've ever done something like that, though.
No, but it's, interestingly enough, we are launching soon an app. It's called the 311 app. So it's a similar real time when you report someone doing something, you know, wrong. This particular 311 is going to start in our aquatic invasive plant program. So primarily it was for people to report plant infestations in areas or where they see a problem, they could, and it's real time, that it would go directly to our AIS program. That being said, is that the intent on that is to expand that 311 once we get it up and going, is to, you know, possibly expand it in other areas. I honestly didn't really think about this one particular one, but that's a great idea, you know, to have that app available for boaters to then report immediately, you know, incidents that are going out on a waterway. Because as we all know that, you know, law enforcement and are out there enforcing, but, you know, some of them, their marine patrol units aren't, you know, there's not many of them always out there.
It might be even more effective in the boating community, because the way they see these real-time reports are dots on the screen, and you've got a moving vehicle maybe going 80 miles an hour. But if there were several real-time reports coming in from different boaters about a particular activity, it would pretty much pinpoint exactly where it was in real time. And unless it's a pretty fast speed boat, it's still going to be around. And this is in view or in context of very limited law enforcement available on the water.
Right. Yep. Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further questions with regards to that portion of my presentation, I'll move on to the Boating Safety and Enforcement Financial Aid Program. The purpose of the program is to provide local governmental agencies whose waterways have high usage by transient boaters and an insufficient tax base to fully support a boating safety and enforcement program. The program is not intended to fully fund a participating agency's boating safety and enforcement activities. An agency's participation is entirely voluntary. With state funding from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund of $11.5 million, the division provides funding to 40 agencies that participate in the program. This is made up of 38 counties and two cities. Next slide. The program activities include search and rescue operations, including the recovery of drowned bodies, enforcement of state and local laws and regulations, inspections of vessels for compliance, and supervision of organized on the water boating activities or water events. Next slide. The division provided $11.5 million in funding for fiscal year 1920 to the 40 participating agencies. In addition, the participating agencies are required to commit 100% of their boat taxes. This was made up of a total of $6.6 million. Once counties have expended their boat taxes and the funding from DBW, they operate on their county general fund, which was approximately $36.6 million. The total spent combined between DBW funding and the county funding for this program was over $54.7 million. This is an increase by approximately $20 million from the last fiscal year. As you can see, the agency's need exceeds the program budget amount. This shows the agency's commitment and importance to this program. Next slide. Listed here are a few of the statistics the division collects from the annual boating activity report, which is required by the participating agencies. Next slide. The division partners with various statewide programs that promote boater safety and education. Listed here are a few of those partners. And next slide. Now I'd like to talk about Operation Drywater, which is a year-round boating under the influence awareness and enforcement campaign. Operation Drywater is a heightened awareness and enforcement three-day weekend, which takes place annually around July 4th. As a nationwide awareness, counties throughout California register to participate. Local law enforcement, including California State Parks, participated in the 2020 nationwide three-day heightened awareness campaign. I'm happy to announce that San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department received the NASBLA 2020 Operation Drywater National Award for Small Category Top Agency Award. Over the three-day course of the weekend, San Bernardino Sheriff's Department deployed three officers and made 18 under the influence arrests. Next slide. And that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Megan, do we have anybody registered for question or comment for this section?
Herman, I am not seeing any public comments at this time.
Any additional questions from the commissioners? Okay, thank you, John and Jody, for your presentation.
Thank you.
Our next agenda item will be public comment period for non-agenda items. This time we will hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comments. After hearing all the public comments, we will continue the meeting with the agenda items and administrative items. Do we have anybody signed up for this section?
I'm not seeing any public comments. I just like to remind listeners. Oh, we have one. I'd also like to remind listeners to press *9 to raise your hand if you're dialing in by phone. I'm going to go ahead and call out the comment we have. Andrea Luker. Apologies if I mispronounced that. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and you are unmuted.
Excellent. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Andrea Luker. I am the president of the California Association of Harbor Masters and Port Captains. As you probably know, we represent many of the municipal and special district ports and harbors in California. And I'm also the harbor manager of Port San Luis Harbor District here on the central coast of California. Many of our members have benefited from the Division of Boating and Waterways programs and grants, and we're most appreciative for those opportunities. As an organization in existence since 1948, we have a wealth of data, information, and experience from the harbor and port world. Our organization members attended the workshop yesterday, and others are listening in today in the meeting today. Our organization is working diligently to make sure that we stay in the forefront and continue to be relevant in the many discussions and decisions your board makes. As you also likely know, our association works in tandem with many of the other allied agencies, some of which you heard from today, in support of boating, waterways, ports, and harbors. Briefly and specifically to the budget revise, and similar to comments made by Mr. Desmond and Mr. Bumpus, we appreciate the changes we see based on the discussions and meetings that have been held so far. We are looking forward to a comprehensive stakeholder process, and we also have significant interest in an economic impact study being done. We do look forward to continuing to work with Ramona and the other DBW staff, and I appreciate the ability to make this comment today and have a good rest of your meeting. Thank you.
Chair Ehrman, I am seeing no further public comments. I think you're on mute, Chair Ehrman.
Talking to myself. So I will formally close the public comments portion of the meeting, and we will move on to the administrative items on the agenda, which will start out. As you all know, we had our Virginia Madueño, who was our vice chair, has since stepped away from the commission, and there's a vacancy in the position of vice chair. So now we'll conduct an election to fill that vacancy. So at this time, I will make the nomination for Catherine Hawkins to be the vice chair of the Boating Waterways Commission. Any other nominations?
You need a second.
Second.
A second.
Third.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do we need a roll call vote?
Not if it's there's no other nomination, you can make it unanimous.
So we have a unanimous vote, and we will have a new vice chair for the remainder of 2021. That'll be Catherine Hawkins. I'm assuming you accept your nomination.
I accept it and honored to serve. So thank you, Chair Ehrman.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm sorry for being out of order, not asking you that ahead of time. So it's called a pressure sale. So another administrative item, I wanted to propose the idea of rescheduling our November commission meeting to October 12th and 13th to coincide with the Marine Recreation Association Educational Conference in San Diego. We did this 2 years ago, and it was very valuable source for a lot of us to interact with the various stakeholders and attend the presentations that were done throughout the day. And so that's my recommendation. I know there's logistic things that need to go into all of this, but that's what I recommend. And I would love to hear any comments from the commissioners.
Well, I'll just, I have a longstanding commitment in sort of early to mid October, and I don't want to ruin anyone's party. But I would not be able to attend during that time frame.
Okay, we'll note that. Anybody else?
I will also check. I may or may not have a competition, so I'll have to check on that.
I'm certainly available according to my calendar. And, maybe we'll be in person in San Diego. That would be terrific.
And so I'm guessing we just proceed with that as a working idea at this time. There's again, obviously there's things that need to go into this planning and different things like that. So we'll just maintain that as a suggestion until we move forward.
Okay. It could be the commissioner's recommendation to the acting director.
I'm sorry, okay, I heard you. So I'll make that recommendation to Director Ramona Fernandez that we look to that to possibly try to accomplish that. And then we'll determine the availability and the other items that go into it as well.
Yeah, I've noted it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Tom, would you be able to zoom in from where you intend to be?
Yeah, I could do that. I just feel like I'm going to miss out on all the fun times.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're correct. Yeah, I would be able to do that. I'll be in a different time zone. But, you know, like I say, I don't want to rain on the parade. So I think the recommendation of the chair makes a lot of sense that we're present at an event like that.
Okay, so we'll move forward out of administrative items into action items. I have no action items on the agenda. Am I missing anything?
No.
So we'll move to suggested items for the next meeting. Suggested agenda items. Any suggestions? Go ahead, Kitty.
Yeah, I think for the next meeting, that's in August, mid-August, right? We'll have on the agenda a presentation from the folks down in Long Beach about 2028 for the venue for the Olympics for sailing, and that should be kind of fun.
Great. Noted.
Go ahead, Tom.
I have to say I was really kind of surprised to learn about the licensing requirements for commercial operators on non-navigable waters in California. And I actually took a second and looked up the accident. It was in Missouri, and 17 people died. It was on one of these, a duck boat, if you don't know. It's yes. They drive into the water, and just not a craft that you want to be putting a lot of, you know, people in turbulent waters. So I guess my suggested, and I think this falls directly under the responsibility of this commission to ensure that we're having proper licensing for people who endeavor in commercial enterprises such as that. And so I guess my suggestion would be that perhaps we could get a sense of how the state licensing requirement differs from the Coast Guard licensing requirement for similar vessels. So it sounds to me that the state licensing requirement is considerably more lax than what the Coast Guard would require for such operations. And, you know, as Katie can tell you, if you go up there to Donner Lake, I mean, it'll just go from 5 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour in the course of 20 minutes, which is what happened in Missouri. So, you know, it's our responsibility to ensure the safe, not ensure, but to try to do the best we can to ensure the safety of the boating public. So that's, have I made my agenda mind clear? Do you need like a formal, what do you need from me? I sort of went off there. I would say I would like a report on the difference between the state licensing requirement for non-navigable waters and similar licensing requirements under the United States Coast Guard.
So the way that's done is that that's your recommendation to the chair, and then the chair can request that of the acting division director.
Thank you, Catherine.
Sure.
So I will request that. That was a mouthful, but I request that that item to examine the differences, or compare and contrast, if you will, between the state licensing and the Coast Guard requirements to operate those type of vessels in non-navigational waters. Rudy?
Mr. Chair, in response and fear of the angry mob of persons and fish and wildlife outside my window, I would like to request a discussion of under the umbrella of safety of noise, particularly percussive noise abatement enforcement by commercial vessels.
So I will again request We have a discussion on the enforcement of noise abatement from commercial vessels. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. Up to you whether that would be a staff report or recommendations or a discussion or whatever. But I think as the summer progresses, we're going to hear more about this.
So, and possibly we could discuss if there actually is. We could determine or look to see if there is something actually in place at this time.
Yes, and correct. Yes, and if not, what might be done and how? Because we're not only talking about the the other boaters, but a few environmentalists are saying they're scaring the birds, they're scaring the ducks, they're scaring the fish.
And so what I would tell you, Rudy, like when we go to Bass Lake, each boat has a bigger sound system than the one next to them, and they compete with each other to play their music, and it's massive, the noise. And so when they're all parked together, they all try to outplay the other one so they don't have to, because they stay on their boats, and it's you're correct, it's unbelievable the amount of noise that comes from the boats when they're parked at shore.
Now, this wouldn't be tolerated perhaps out of, you know, outside the 4th of July or something like that on public streets or neighborhoods. And as more people rightly want to use, you know, the bays, the rivers, the beaches, I just think maybe we should take a peek at it and see if anything should be done or can be done.
Okay. So Ramona, did I convey that correctly?
Yes. I think so. I just to verify, you want to find out if there is anything, if there's anything in place. So normally I know that when we get ordinances, and I'll check statute to see what statutorily, from Harbors and Navigation Code that we could do. But I know that a lot of the ordinances are generated at the local level, and all ordinances come through the state to ensure that they don't conflict with, come through us to ensure that they're not in conflict with Harbors and Nav Code. So, you could look into your local, if you know someone, Commissioner Morello, that's in your area, that if there's any ordinances in place, that could be a start.
And if so, again, how to enforce, if not on the books and enforce.
So yeah, I would just say, Ramona, right. It's very likely that it's a municipal code issue that needs to be enforced.
Yes. So normally at state level, we wouldn't. But again, I will look into it at what we can do at regulatory at the state level.
Okay, but let's see. I think
I'm going to just chime in on, like, you know, San Diego is the same animal as San Francisco, and it's all federal jurisdiction. I would think, I don't think you can have a municipal ordinance I know we're kind of getting far and wide here, but I don't think you can have a municipal ordinance that regulates conduct on a federal navigable waterway.
And we have the port in the bay, of course, is the Port of San Diego, which comes to mind.
Yeah, I think they're shared in some areas of the waterways with
the local. Has never been clear, frankly. I don't know.
Well, the Unified Port District was created to and sort of blend the municipalities of San Diego, Coronado, Chula Vista National City, and Imperial Beach. So I think they may be one stop shopping. I don't know.
And we do have a liaison at the San Diego Harbor Patrol, so we can definitely reach out to Harbor Patrol and ask the question.
That would be very helpful. So, Mr. Chair, if it's just a matter of a discussion and staff having some background on it, I think that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I think that would be educational for all of us as well. So we're all trying to scratch our heads to figure out who would actually have jurisdiction over these items.
Exactly.
Any other agenda items from the commissioners? So I would like to myself to agendize the, a discussion on creating some ad hoc committees to address the boating facility needs assessment, to identify items that we want to further examine or to keep updated on. So at this point, maybe just discussion, but I would like to establish that. I think we talked about yesterday that it's possible the commission's involvement in the last time was towards the tail end. It would be nice to be at the front end going forward so we can kind of keep track of the recommendations and the impact of the study. So leading into the next one, there's input from the front end. So I'm not sure if I'm wording that correctly, but I would like to have discussion on either a committee or ad hoc committees to identify certain areas that we want to delve into.
This is where everybody ducks.
I was going to ask our attorney. So would that be something that the commission would decide on topic and then vote in for whom or which commissioner would lead that?
Right. So that's an administrative action that's done by the chair. And you can appoint committees that are two or fewer, obviously two, for ad hoc types of efforts where it's a temporary type of situation. That type of meeting is not publicly noticed. Committee meetings of three or more are publicly noticed and require a public meeting when the committee members want to get together. Those are standing committees, and those are more for budgets, you know, other long-term types of things. By giving a topic to a standing committee of three, that allows the committee to, as I said, meet in public, but also allows the committee to formulate a recommendation that comes back to the board as a whole. The ad hoc committees of two or fewer do not make recommendations. They come back to the board with their ideas, and then the board takes it up.
So would that be a correct suggestion then, to that we agendize the discussion of creating that, for so we're not just at just randomly plugging people into topics that they're not really suited for?
So you'd want to put that on your next meeting's agenda.
Yeah,
and then you
perfect.
Could basically do that, have that discussion. Okay, so, and appoint, do those appointments.
So that's, I would request that, Ramona, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would urge you to lean in favor of ad hoc. That gives you the discretion to look at very timely topics and maybe save on the paperwork.
No, I agree. I think we need to examine the nature of what we're doing before we would any decision on any kind of a long-term committee. So, and that's all I have. Any other agenda items? So we can move forward. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
No. I move to adjourn.
You can actually do your motion to adjourn by acclamation if you want. So if there's no objection, you can just say, if there's no objection, I'll adjourn the meeting.
Perfect. Perfect. If there's no objection, I'll adjourn the meeting. I appreciate all of you guys' time today.
Thank you very much.
All right, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you.
Looked it up and it was like